It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Running on this 20th day of May 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you pop in right now, you'll be greeted by early arriver Squeaky and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is the third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space because it's really, really windy in the man cave. He is joined in his moderating duties by the longtime pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve. From Georgistan, Squeaky and I are I would say, over-moderated at this point. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being there. It's so appreciated. Always. Did I do the Hi, I'm Robin part? Yeah, because I am. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. That means that thanks go out to our 20th day of the month subscribers. And that includes, or that is our pal Ralphs in Wisconsin. Armand, thank you. Thank you to Dr. John. Thank you to Vincent. Thank you to our pal Reverbo, the human man. Thank you to non-billable Rick. Thank you. Thank you to Carl. And thank you all so very, very much indeed. And thanks as well to Mark for jumping in this afternoon. That was deeply appreciated, Mark. Thank you. And that means our fundraising goal for the evening is $1,015. That means we've got $115 to finish off Monday, and then this week is unfunded. Thank you so very much for those who do help try to keep the program on the air. Let's see. About last night, Joey writes, Richard and I used to love to do a lot of different things together, from watching sports to watching and discussing politics, including fighting over Bernie and Hillary, and finally fighting over the potential existence of the baby Jesus in our attempts to discuss religion. Richard claimed Jesus was a Palestinian who wanted to kill the Jews, and I would always yell back that the Jews killed Jesus first, and when Jesus came back, he never killed anybody. The hell are you talking about? We loved watching baseball on our favorite team, the Cleveland Indians, especially when a great young pitcher by the name of Corey Kluber pitched. Kluber, when he was with Cleveland, won 2 Cy Young Awards in 20 games one season. In 2014, Kluber won 18 games in his first Cy Young, and Richard and I were absolutely thrilled as we listened to many games on the radio while going to and from Cleveland to visit his ailing wife at the Cleveland Clinic. Otherwise, we caught the rest of the games when they were on television, but we were not watching together on the night back on May 13th of 2015 when Kluber's pitched when Kluber pitched one of the greatest games of all time. Ironically, my wife and I were at a Cubs game in Wrigley Field when my phone rang and Richard informed me that Kluber pitched a two-hitter and had a no-hitter into the seventh and ended up only giving up one hit, walking no one and striking out 18 in the process of shutting out the St. Louis Cardinals. Ironically for Kluber, that may have been the best game he ever pitched, but probably his worst year ever, as he struggled with injuries and only ended up with a 9-16 record. Richard, in joking fashion, all that year, 2015, would often say, "Get rid of him, he's a bum and he's all washed up." We'd both laugh because he won the Cy Young the previous year and could still pitch well when he was healthy. In the next 3 years, when Kluber won 18 twice and 20 once, adding another Cy Young to his resume, Richard said, "Yeah, but he never pitched a no-hitter. Even at his best, he always gives up a couple of hits. He's washed up. Get rid of him." Again, all three of us would just laugh out loud, Richard, Jeffrey, and me. Just to prove that the goddess of irony never sleeps, last night Corey Kluber took the mound near his hometown of Coppell, Texas. Kluber now pitches with the Yankees after attempting to pitch one COVID year with the Texas Rangers. So down in Arlington, Texas, just about 15 miles from where Kluber grew up in Coppell, Corey Kluber took the mound at the 8:07 Eastern time mark, as all the Rangers games start at 7 minutes after the hour. At exactly 8:07, I received a text from Richard's son, Gary, that his dad had passed. I was actually pulling into the garage of the condo when I received the text. My dearest of friends and Gary's father had departed this life. We both just hugged one another and cried while hospice took care of the immediate arrangements. Both of us realized how lucky we were to have had the greatest blackjack player of all time, a friend to me and a father to Gary, in our lives. Meanwhile, down in Texas, Corey Kluber pitched a no-hitter against the Rangers, and I can only wonder, with Richard departing at 8:07, if on the way to Blackjack Heaven, if he made a stop in Arlington, Texas, to watch that game. Thanks for everything, Richard. I love you, and we'll miss you forever. This has been Joey's Journal. Or Thursday, the 20th day of May, with Giraffrey looking to high to the heavens. Joey, I feel such sorrow for the loss of your dear, dear friend. And I hope memories such as you just shared with us will be a happy and loving delight as his memory takes part in eternity. Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, that's a tough way to begin a program. Indeed. These things are hard. Just hard. Because, you know, Joey and Giraffe bring us a lot of good humor and insight. And I know how much Joey must be hurting right now. And that makes me hurt, because Joey is awfully good people. So please, Joey, know how much this community cares about you. It is thorn in the side Thursday here, and we have an abundance of them. Small mercies. The Israelis and the Palestinians have reached a ceasefire. One hopes that it sticks. But, of course, all these things are merely interims in between the bloodshed. But may it last long. can't last long indeed. And may the babies slaughtered in their beds by precision weaponry. Well, may no more babies be slaughtered in their beds by precision weaponry provided by the United States of America and the taxpayers thereof. Thorns, huh? Thorns in the side? Ah, yeah. Yeah, we got them. You know, of course, that by a vote of 252 to 175, including 35 members of the GOP, the House of Representatives voted to establish a January 6th commission to look into all aspects of the insurrectionist attack on the Capitol of the United States. And with that having been said, today, which was, it was apparently a lovely day in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, that man with a spine of silly putty, took to the little spot where they have their outside press conferences and decided to not take questions. I mean, well, sort of took questions, but, well, when it came down to one particular point, I mean, Kevin McCarthy had a lot to say. He just didn't have anything to say on one particular issue. Oh, but he's trying to rebrand. You know, they get on brand. They get on the Republicans and maggots. They get on the branding issue quickly. So already he's referring to it, this commission to study all aspects of the insurrectionist attack on the Capitol of the United States. Well, according to Kevers, and I'm sure the multimillionaires of the for-profit media will pick this up and run with it like a fumbled football, it's the Pelosi Commission. You know, after the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, we had the Warren Commission, headed up by Supreme Court Chief Justice Earl Warren. Well, this is going to be, according to Kevers, the Pelosi Commission.
Questions, comments?
Mr. Leader.
Let's start. Let's guess. What do we have?
So,
about Cuba.
Would you be willing to testify about your conversation with Donald Trump on January 6th? If you were asked by an outside commission,
sure.
You
Next
would.
Question.
Were you surprised to see 35 Republicans vote for the commission? No, not at all.
I thought it would probably be higher. But this Pelosi commission that we tried to work on for quite some time, remember, I asked Pelosi for one on January 13th. She spent 4 months just playing politics with it. In that time period.
He sounds like some up east boarding school asshole. Referring to Speaker Nancy Pelosi only by her last name, certainly not as Speaker of the House. Pelosi. He's a cheap and tawdry little piece of garbage.
An officer got killed on Good Friday just across with this Capitol. She didn't want to have the scope to do that as well. I just felt we're going to have...
You know, there's really not a reason for a scope to have that as well. There was no connection between the killing of a Capitol Police officer on Good Friday and the insurrectionist attack on the Capitol of the United States by a bunch of maggots. There was no logical connection. There was no nexus. Why would you do that? But, of course, you don't get to challenge a Kevin McCarthy on a piece of bilious sophistry like that because, well, time marches on, right? Sure.
Four things happening right now. You've got two committees in the Senate already doing their investigation. I believe in 2 weeks they'll already have their report back, even though Pelosi wasted all this time. You got the architect of the Capitol given $10 million to study what we need done here to protect it. And then you got the Justice Department, rightfully does a much better job than we could ever do, arrested already 445 people. Probably more, another 100 coming.
Yeah, and by the way, Steve in New York pointing out, Kevin McCarthy, someone's letting their sexism show. Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, just general lack of respect. Sure.
That's the type of work we want to make sure done, that it never happens again, that those who participated and caused it should be held accountable, and that we secure this Capitol and we don't play politics with it. I just think a Pelosi commission is a lot of politics. Yes.
What in the language of the bill limits the scope of the commission? It says it can look at any...
it doesn't say any.
It does.
No, it says influencing factors.
No. Influencing factors. If it's something relevant, that would be an influencing factor, potentially.
I have a difference of opinion here than our legal counsel does, too. So I gave language to Speaker Pelosi. I sent her...
Oh, finally, she gets to be Speaker. Wow, how nice.
Two different letters. She never would communicate at all in that process. I think the scope needs to be expanded. If you look at the 9/11 Commission, we looked at what happened on 9/11 and what the buildup for that was. And I think that would be important here as well.
Did we really? Really? And does that include dim leaders sitting on Dick Cheney's lap? And right.
Yes. Do you think it's a conflict of interest for members to be voting on a commission that they might have to potentially be witnesses for and provide information on?
No, because who knows what they're going to do on the commission. So, no, I don't think so.
That none of your members were in any communication with any of the people who stormed Capitol Hill?
But thank you for the question. Everybody have a nice day.
Yeah, were any of your members in communication with the people who participated in the attacks? Thank you for the question. I think that's a yes. Just guessing, but I think that's a yes. At the very least, and since Joey mentioned Richard Skillet Blackjack, at the gambling tables, that's something that we might refer to as a tell. That was a tell. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Right? Yep. Sure. Oh, wait. What's that, Professor? What's that? Oh.
You dick!
Mm-hmm. I concur, Professor Spicoli. I concur entirely. I think during this just one of many ridiculous press conferences by McCarthy, he invited the DOJ to appoint a special prosecutor. Kind of does sound that way, doesn't it? And that reminds me, I had a note yesterday evening, and by the way, my apologies, for having to end early. Like I said, I'm trying to do a better job of walking the walk and talking the talk. And that's what that was about, attending a meeting. And by the way, coming up in about 45 minutes or so, because we haven't had a conversation in a while, our pal Dan Fisher will join us here. And it will... We've never had a bad conversation, and we've had a lot of good ones and some that were absolutely stellar and fantastic. And so, you know, I have a feeling this will be a dandy. I really do. But no, what I was going to point out is that last night I had, because I had to leave the show early, I had a message. I had a message from Darlene and in Connecticut, and she shared something with me that she had done. And when mentioning a special prosecutor in that email, it reminded me of the message, and I wanted to make sure and share it with you. Darlene says, "You can contact the DOJ. I just did, and addressed it to the Attorney General. I suggest all members of the Horn Family Community Congregation do the same. I think Merrick Garland is keyed into the news and American sentiments about what's happening politically." And what Darlene wrote was, "I appreciate and thank you for the work you are doing. That stated, I'm writing to ask that you seriously consider appointing a special prosecutor with no limitations to investigate the January 6th coup attempt insurrection, i.e. attempted overthrow of our government. No matter how high up the food chain it goes, they must be investigated and criminal charges brought." Darlene continues and said, "Americans saw what happened, and it is clear that a bipartisan congressional commission won't be an honest effort, let alone get off the ground. It'll be politicized in ways that will only make January 6th a dry run for something worse. time's wasting. There must be serious consequences for those involved directly and those that led, goaded, and encouraged their actions. Thank you. And, the website will show you that, your message has been sent. And it really is not, I think it's a good idea. I mean, at least the suggestion is being made. Maybe the conversations are being had, especially the more you see the guilty behavior of little GQP dirtbags like Kevin McCarthy. A 1-6 commission, Steve in New York says, I'm thinking that the Democrats should be calling the commission on the January 6th insurrection, or calling it the commission on the inquiry into the January 6th terrorist attack on the Capitol, or the commission on the possible treasonous acts of January 6th. For the bumper sticker slogan, I'm thinking we should call it the Insurrection Commission. All of which are good ideas, and certainly this politicizes the issue, but Jesus Christ, the attack itself was politicized. Maybe call it the Trump insurrection. Or at the very least, the MAGA insurrection. Again, because that is what it is. Now, 35 Republicans joined, as noted, joined the House, Democrats in the House, to vote for this commission. And this, of course, led to a tantrum being thrown down. I don't know. Is he in Bedminster, or is he still is in Mar-a-Lardass? I don't know. But Nitwit Nero had to unburden himself of his feelings about the...
See, 35 wayward Republicans, they just can't help themselves. We have much better policy and are much better for the country, but the Democrats stick together, the Republicans don't. They don't have the Romneys, Little Ben Sassies, and Cheneys of the world. Unfortunately, we do. Sometimes there are consequences to being ineffective and weak. The voters understand.
Yes, the voters understand, you fucking nitwit. That's why you're not president for a second term. We understood all too well. God almighty.
The voters understand.
And sometimes there are consequences to being ineffective and weak. Like, you know, not getting reelected. He is deep in the hands of the goddess of irony, and he doesn't even know it. Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, McCarthy inviting the DOJ to appoint a special prosecutor? I don't know how I feel about that. Part of me thinks it's because he actually thinks that the politicians, Kevin McCarthy being one, that helped plan and set the conditions for the attempted coup, won't be punished, and he can look good like he's all for the rule of law. Part of me thinks it's a setup to get a very watered-down and specific set of guidelines for the prosecutor to follow so nobody else faces punishment, and they can say, see, no big deal. Maybe I'm thinking too much on this one, but the Republicans are always 30 steps ahead in pulling their fuckery. Yeah, they're good at it. That's why the term rat fucking entered the national political lexicon from the Republican side of the aisle. Yeah, pretty much. Oh, the thorns. But yeah, every now and then you get the idea that Nancy Pelosi's bag of fucks to give has just become hollowed out. It turns out that there are a bunch of members of the House of Representatives, all Republicans, of course, who have not and will not get the COVID-19 vaccine. Speaking today, Speaker Pelosi, the Speaker, spoke and said, it is unfortunate that a large number of people in the Congress have refused to be vaccinated or have been vaccinated and don't want to admit it.
And she said, we have a responsibility to make sure that the House of Representatives chamber is not a petri dish because of the selfishness of some not to be vaccinated. Ooh, selfishness. And it is. Or perhaps it's sociopathy. But that's too big a word for a press release. And it turns out, over on the Democratic side of the House, the majority, there are the Democrats are 100% vaccinated in both the Senate and the House. Now, on the other hand, in the House of Representatives, the members of the GQP there, yeah, they got 212 members in the House, and only 95 of them are fully vaccinated. That's a total of 44.8%. And so the attending physician of the House of Representatives has made clear that he will not lift the mask requirement in the House until everybody has gotten their shot. And so there will be no maskless sessions in the House of Representatives, I guess, for the foreseeable future. And Nancy Pelosi got a little pissed. What is this, the honor system as to whether somebody's been vaccinated? Do you want them breathing in your face on the strength of their honor? Ouch. Meanwhile, Kevers, who won't say anything about the members of his caucus who were, giving tours to the insurrectionists and showing them all the paths around the building or through the building. Well, Kevers introduced a measure that would allow members of the House to not wear a mask on the House floor. It went down in flames. Brian Mast, a maggot, said, I got fined $500 because I wouldn't wear a mask on the House floor. Then there was maggot Ralph Norman, who took to Twitter today and said, this is nothing more than political theater. Theater, I'm telling you, it's political theater. All over the Capitol complex, staff and members are maskless. It's time for Speaker Pelosi to drop the charade. But as was intended, the House of Representatives is, at least to some extent, a reflection of the American people. The folks at Morning Consult did a poll. And it turns out that if you're an American and you're not vaccinated, in other words, you're a COVIDiot, well, you're twice as likely to say, I'm okay going around without a mask, as a person who has been vaccinated. Earlier today, as I was attending to errands, I was listening to the National Petroleum Radio, and I heard some reporter talking about how vaccination rates in urban areas, in cities, densely populous areas, they are outpacing vaccines in rural areas by a significant number. Yeah. And the NPR reporter, I guess she wanted her focus to be availability, and she said that it's the vaccine is more easily and readily available in urban areas than out in the hinterlands, seeming to imply that that's the reason that more urban city dwellers are vaccinated than rural America. What was curious is that, and I don't know what the, I don't, would the, is there a meaning? I'm not sure. But what I found curious was the fact that she made no mention of the fact that even though cities are more population dense, well, it's rural America where people went galumphing and LARPing and smolicking and grabulating to the polls to vote for Donald J. Trump. The J stands for
don't jab me.
Even though he got jabbed. Even after he had the Rona. Yeah, strange, huh? But that might have something to do with why the rates are the way they are. We are a long way. Oh, we're a long, we're not, it's not that we're not in Kansas anymore. You don't want to be in Kansas. We're a long way from herd immunity. And for somebody like Dan Fisher, with whom I will be talking in about a half an hour, that has to be infuriating. Dan is and will be immunocompromised for the rest of his natural born days because he is a heart transplant recipient. And that means his immune system has to be kept suppressed in order to keep his body from attacking his new heart. But that's okay. Maggots don't give a shit about that. Maggots don't give a shit about anybody but themselves. And when it comes to the vaccine and masks, they really don't care much about themselves either. Huh, wait a minute. That almost sounds like the GQP has become a suicide cult. Go figure. But it's a real thing, this refusal to vaccinate. Stupid. In addition to the virus being deadly, so too is stupidity. Oh, and the and going back to Kevers there, the architect of the Capitol, we gave him ten gajillion dollars to see what we got to do to make this place more safe. Well, they had a hearing, and the architect of the Capitol issued a report about the damage that the maggots had done on January the 6th. And among other things that he, that the architect of the Capitol reported was that they destroyed and stole Capitol photography equipment. They tore down part of the inaugural platform. They tracked blue paint onto priceless stone balustrades. And decorative cleaners were necessary to restore it. And this is in addition to what we already knew, you know, about them shitting in their hands and then wiping it on the walls. That sort of thing. The bear spray in the Capitol. Informing the House, Brett Blanton said that, quote, on January 6th, members of my team were preparing the grounds and he's the overseer of the building and grounds. Brett Blanton is. On January 6th, members of my team were preparing the grounds in the presidential inauguration stage. Our artists and trades teams were excited to finish painting the stands a bright white with a deep blue edging on the main stage of the platform. As crowds began to appear on the west front at about midday, my staff was moved indoors or sent home. Shockingly, over the course of a couple of hours, the hard work of our team was destroyed. The platform was wrecked. There was broken glass and other debris littering the ground. Sound systems and photography equipment were damaged beyond repair or stolen. Two historic Olmsted lanterns were ripped from the ground, and the blue paint we had so painstakingly worked on all morning was tracked all over the historic stone balustrades and Capitol building hallways. Well, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Brett Blanton continued and said, statues, murals, historic benches, and original shutters also suffered varying degrees of damage. This damage to our precious artwork and statues requires expert cleaning and conservation. Yeah. But, you know, we need to move on. I don't see how we can. But some people already have moved on. And by people, I mean corporations. Corporations are people, my friends, human beings, as Bishop Willard once famously said. Yep, corporations are moving on, and they're back to pumping money into the pockets of members of the Insurrection Caucus. Corporate donations rolling in to Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri and representing Matt Gaetz at Just Gaetz Better of Florida. Yeah. The folks over at CREW, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, said that the insurrectionists are raking in the big stuff, hand over fist. Over at the CREW website, Robert McGuire and Caitlin Moniz published an article that explained, in just the first few months since the insurrection, corporate and industry PACs have contributed more than $2.6 million to campaigns, leadership PACs, and party committees, allied with the 147 members of Congress who fed the big lie that led to the deadly attack on the Capitol. In all, 170 business PACs, some of which had previously committed to stop giving, have donated to political committees that support and defend members who voted not to certify the election results. At least 103 of the 147 members of the Sedition Caucus, along with the two main GOP congressional party committees, the NRSC and the NRCC, have benefited from corporate giving after January the 6th, that from the report. As of the end of March, the 10 who have gotten the most, they've gotten more than $22,000 apiece from an average of 10 business PACs per member. Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania, got $44,000 from 17 corporations. Representative Blaine Lutkemeyer of Missouri. You know, if you take an injection of about a million units of penicillin, it'll clear up your Lutkemeyer. Yeah, it's a heck of a report. Who's doing it? Pfizer. Jesus, really? Okay, now I am worried about the liquid barcodes. Pfizer has given to the Sedition Caucus. Intel inside. Yeah. Insurrection inside. T-Mobile. CVS pharmacies. And real estate trade packs, mortgage banking trade packs, insurance agent trade packs. And the insurance gang Cigna. The report noting the health insurer Cigna released a statement after the insurrection saying that it would discontinue support of any elected official who encouraged or supported violence or otherwise hindered a peaceful transition of power. Not so much. It took a little less than a month, but bang, there was the Cigna PAC giving $15,000 to the National Republican Senatorial Committee and another $15,000 to the National Republican Congressional Committee. So, yeah, they've moved on. Yep, moving on. Intel, T-Mobile, Pfizer, CVS. I've gone to CVS for the last time. That's not difficult to do, not at all. No. A couple of messages coming in. Kyle says, Republican maggot policies are so much better that they keep losing elections and have to rig the system just to fucking win. I haven't said this in a while, but shut the fuck up, Donnie. hear, hear. And Flavio asks, you mean all they can do is fine them $500? The sergeant-at-arms can't drag them out of the house by their ears? As much as we might like it, I guess we haven't gotten to that part. I don't know. I don't know where that part of the program comes in, but it might be kind of nice. You know, seeing somebody like maybe Mo Brooks, Les Brames, or Louis Asparagus Gohmert. Who, the last I checked, has some prodigiously sized ears. And getting dragged out by them. Mask or $500, says Lee in New York. Here's how stupid these financial experts and captains of industry are. If you cannot understand the bottom line value of a mask versus a $500 charge, well, that explains why you think tax cuts pay for themselves and rich people will flee if you take some of their billions and deficits mysteriously rise. Man, that almost makes it sound like my ciphering's halfway decent. It's true. It's true. Lee asking earlier, where in the world is Donald John Trump? I remember when we cared where in the world Carmen Sandiego was. All I care is that Trump is not tweetering his thumbs. Point to, yeah, you got a point. Darlene clarifies, I never said McCarthy was aware he conjured a DOJ special prosecutor, LOL. Trump will still keep crying witch hunt. That tired old canard, who isn't sick to death of it, oh God, please, has worked, so he'll keep using it. Bouncing back and forth between Mar-a-Lardass and Bedminster, I don't care to check the spelling of either, works perfectly for that miserable jackhole and his vampiro wife. Vampiro wife gets a cowbell. So does jackhole. Because it fits with the tourist seasons and he meets Palm Beach's use requirements that Mar-a-Lardass not be a residence. So 6 months there, 6 months up here, yeah, yeah. He can game the system like he always does. By the way, I came across the interesting tidbit. Ooh, word knowing that Melania is derived from a Greek word meaning dark. Yeah, Darlene says, I do love that goddess of irony. Praise her. Praise her with laughter. That's what she likes. She does. And thanks to the Supreme Court, Kyle adds, those bribes, I mean campaign contributions, are perfectly legal because corporations are people too, my friends. Human beings. Yeah, you hate it when they have a sad. Oh, dear God, 45 at office just sent out a media advisory. He's pathetic. 45th President Donald J. Trump will be interviewed by Chanel Rian with Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Oh, gosh, let's all go and... No, let's don't and say we didn't. What a fuckwit. Please. Ugh. Oh, and, since it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, we haven't had a Clanny Oakley sighting for a while. Well, there she is. Representing Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, otherwise known as Clanny Oakley of Colorado. She's upset about having to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And so they booked her on Dr. Gina Primetime. Hey, it's some TV show somewhere. Real America's Voice. Right. So Lauren Bobblehead Boebert showed up and hilarity ensued. I mean, by hilarity, I mean we found out again that Lauren Bobblehead Boebert's a fucking idiot.
You know, I'm really enjoying telling Speaker Pelosi to kiss my mask, though. Yesterday,
Dr. Gina, the blonde lady at wherever the hell this is. Oh, she just giggled. I'm enjoying telling her to kiss my mask. Well, Speaker Pelosi is enjoying putting your $500 that gets deducted directly from your paycheck into, I guess, the general fund. Yeah. But the hockey puck part of this is when she gets around to describing Texas after Greg Abbott opened it wide, just opened the state up. Now ain't nobody got to wear no mask.
Asked Beth Van Dyne and several other colleagues joined me in refusing to wear a mask on the House floor. Thomas Massie and I both got warnings, and both of our letters ended up in the same exact place, ironically, the trash. Leftists won't even listen to the bureaucrats at the CDC, and it just goes to show that this party's follow the science slogan.
You silly twit. She's listening to the attending physician of the House of Representatives. Oh, well, but I'm sure Clanny Oakley doesn't go to the doctor. I'm sure she just goes to the local barber for a good bloodletting. Yeah, what? Apparently they apply the leeches directly to her head, and it's, well, probably to the extent that they would be brain-eating leeches, they're starving to death.
Is a total joke, just like this entire administration, just like the entire Democrat Party. They want to tell you to listen to science and listen to data and facts, but they haven't done that for more than a year. 2 weeks to slow the spread turned into communism really, really quickly. Now,
what, Edith, huh? What, huh?
Oh, and another famous line from that great old program, stifle yourself. Turned into communism. Workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your brains.
Now it's show me your papers. But don't forget, Gina, Texas removed their mask mandate 2 months ago, and Sleepy Joe called it Neanderthal thinking. No, sir. Republicans are just following the science. And since removing the mask mandate 2 months ago, Texas has not reported a single COVID death. Not one.
Oops. On March the 2nd, when Governor Greg Pandemic Abbott said, everybody take off your masks, we're wide open. Well, on that March 2nd, Texas had 46,538 deaths. May 19th, yesterday, they had 50,051 deaths. Now, we all understand that my ciphering is suspect. But let's see. 50,051 take away 46,538. That's more than 3,500 people. Which is a lot more than zero. Mm-hmm. That's 13 more than 3,500 people. That's 3,513. Huh, how about that? I cipher better than Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. Mm-hmm. Clanny Oakley. God. And she gets paid to be that stupid. It's amazing. America, what a country. Indeed. Kyle with the appropriate response.
They won't even listen to our bullshit right-wing talking points on science that they have nothing to do with science or truth or facts. We're being canceled! Ah, shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and back to being dragged out by the ear by the sergeant-at-arms. Jeremy in Vermont says, speaking of ears, can Rush hear again? Is that why he's been on an extended vacation, just getting the ears fixed at the liberal media destroyed. I mean, that his opioid addiction destroyed. I'm so lost now. I don't know who to what and why hate and why. Can he Can he come back to the air? Well, Jeremy, I hate to bust your bubble, but no. America's truth detector, El Rushbo, is still El Dedo, El Corpso. And has been for what now, 92 days? Randy and PA pointing out, Zombie Rush Limbaugh. Rams, my friends, yum! Today's edition of the Golden EIB Microphone and the Excellence in Broadcasting Corporation is brought to you by Zombie Brains. Zombie Brains, yum. You know, you guys got your A game tonight, no doubt about it. Meanwhile, let's check in with Deanna Lorraine. Now, I went looking around earlier today. I found no follow-up on the story about the pro-Palestinians in Los Angeles a couple of nights ago that looked a shit ton more like, Proud Boys and behaved like them, too. I don't know why there was a lack. It's not just a lack of follow, it's a lack of curiosity. The same people who were likely outraged by that little piece of street theater. Remember, they're also delicate, sensitive snowflakes who cannot abide things like masks. So as a consequence, you've got the Deanna Lorraines of the world. And I had no idea, but apparently there is there's a show out there called the Stu Peters Show. Damn, all I had to do was read the name of the program, and we've ruined dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone and perhaps a snack somewhere in Southern California. Hey, Grandpa, what's for dinner? Stu Peters! Oh, yuck. With testicle gravy.
Oh!
But it appearing on the Stu Peters Show, does nobody tell these people? I mean, what's next? I mean, you know, braised butthole, the braised butthole show? Huh? So, you know what having, what separating vaccinated from unvaccinated people is in public spaces? You know what that is? Hey, you know what that is. You know how I set up this clip? Sure. Okay. Tell us again, Deanna Lorraine.
They're going to start doing dividing up their sections of sporting events, churches, and other areas of public interest, and it's going to say vaccinated people or non-vaccinated people.
Yeah, so when you walk in, like the hostess used to ask you, smoking or non?
Right.
Now it's going to be this.
Now it's going to be vaccinated or non-vaccinated. And of course, we know because there's so many mindless sheeple out there that the vaccinated section is going to be a hell of a lot bigger than the non-vaccinated section. But that's how it's going to be. So sporting events, if you go to a...
Wait a damn minute. The vaccinated section is going to be larger than the non-vaccinated section because the vaccinated people are the sheeple?
Wake up, sheeple.
Oh, God, I've started something. Lee in New York says, Stu Peters? You can get a side of Freedom Fries. Well, I mean... Wolf Nipple Chips. Gravy, says Jeremy in Vermont. I know what goes good with testicle gravy, but I'm not going to say it. I'm proud of you, Jeremy. you're learning some restraint.
Baseball game, a football game, etc. You can expect to be put in a different section whether you've been vaccinated or not. Same thing goes with churches. And I think that's even more sinister, honestly, because, you know, this is a place where there should be no division. You should be bringing people together. But they're going to be pushing that in churches as well. Vaccinated section and then non-vaccinated pews.
I'm actually okay with it because I don't really want to be hanging around these vaccinated people. All this talk about transmission and shedding and all of this other stuff. I mean, this is a contagious vaccination. It's a self-spreading vaccination.
What? It's a contagious vaccination, self-spreading. Who are these people? Are these just husks of former human beings currently being occupied by the multi-limbed amorphous aliens from Norblap 9? And what do you want to bet both of these idiots are fully vaccinated? Just asking.
Nation. They started talking about this many years ago, and it's now coming out. It's being exposed. They knew exactly what was going to happen, but yet pushed it on the American people anyway, and globally.
Right, exactly. Yeah, don't shed on me. I don't shed on me. Instead
hashtag.
Of having don't, we need to start having don't shed on me flags.
Yes, exactly.
That's the new freedom. So I don't want to be hanging out with the vax anyways, but just imagine a year ago, did we ever think that this was going to happen? If we did think that it was going to happen, we were labeled conspiracy theorists with tinfoil hats. But
because you are. But the fact of the matter is, what really gets all over me is the privilege. This is sickening. The Institute for Vaccine Serum or something like that is a major producer of the AstraZeneca vaccine. It is located in India. And before the fascist government of Narendra Modi let COVID-19 run wild through the Indian subcontinent, that vaccine institute was the primary source of supply for virtually every country on the African continent. And just because we don't talk a lot about what COVID's doing on the Indian continent, that says a lot more about us than it says about the virus. It's hell there, too. But because of what's happening in India, with the virus raging completely out of control, that vaccine producer has said that they will make no more exports at all. And they're working hand over fist and hammer and tongs to try to get the Indian people vaccinated. And as our dear friend Suman pointed out, whatever problems India may have, that isn't one of them, being averse to vaccines. No, they will take it and take it gladly. And be thrilled to have it, but this stupid, privileged white woman has the gall, for nothing more than the sake of publicity and maybe a paycheck, to look into a camera and say that the vaccine causes the disease. When in point of fact, there's no live virus, there's no killed virus in the vaccine. It's sickening. It's infuriating. God.
experienced, right? Again, we go back to the Holocaust where they had to show their papers, right? We had to show their papers. They had to wear the gold star. Isn't this eerily familiar to that, Stu, where
Absolutely.
We have to show our papers?
Yeah.
We have to show proof of vaccination, and it's going to be separating people from vaccinated versus unvaccinated. This is all.
And Jesus Christ, they cut to some sort of movie video of a World War II German soldier pulling a piece of paper from a typewriter and handing it off. Because you know what? Taking a vaccine is just like, or being separated, vaccinated from non-vaccinated. Well, that's just like the Holocaust. Sure. Yeah, you bet.
Also, back in the day where racism was paramount and they had separate water fountains, separate schools, separate eating areas for blacks and whites.
Yeah, that's not the same thing, Deanna. I don't think you're getting I don't think you're quite hip to the point here. It's not like whites only water fountains, you silly twit. Jesus, the stupid. But that takes us to the end of the first hour of the program. As you may have heard from the tone there, Dan Fisher is on the line. And I'll note that we managed to take down the, we've taken the fundraising goal down by $5. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Jessica in Minnesota. Jessica says a memoriam in honor of Joey's dear friend, Richard. Thank you, Jessica. That's so sweet. Thank you very much. And so that gets us down to $1,010 for the fundraising deficit. $110 finishes Monday, last Monday, this past, three days ago. And there are bills awaiting payment. So thanks in advance for anybody who wants to jump in and help like that. If we could just knock out Monday, $110, and then maybe part of Tuesday, we wouldn't be looking at $1,000. Well, we need to raise $310 so that we're not looking, or $320 actually, so we're not looking at $1,000 fundraising Friday on the front porch community made miracle. Okay? And like I said, Dan Fisher's on the line. We haven't talked in a little while. Dan, of course, you know Dan. Dan is a dear friend. And he is present. Well, I'm not. Well, let's just find out. Let's find out what Dan's present work status is. Dan, good evening. I'm so glad to talk to you.
I'm glad to be able to be here. Are we doing okay technically? We always seem to start out the show with a technical error that requires fixing.
No, we're great. We're golden so far.
So far. Although, you know, you couldn't wait till I showed up before you started bringing out the dick jokes. I'm a little hurt by that.
Oh, well, I didn't know you cared. Well, I wasn't trying to bring out the dick jokes. It's just that when you've got
Stu Peters just presented itself, and you had to take a bite. You had to take a bite of that big old Peters. Why did I say it?
No, you didn't know. No, you're just no.
Just no.
Take a miss.
Well, let's not stew.
Yes, let's not stew over the Peters.
Let's not be dick. Yeah. But by golly, you know, since becoming a woman, you're peppery than usual.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe becoming that, you know, angry white woman, you know, or something. I don't know.
If you call me Karen, this conversation is over.
Call you what?
I said, if you call me Karen, this conversation is over.
Oh, heavens no. I don't know. Maybe it's just because, honestly, I haven't had the luxury of being able to really listen to you in a while or be on the show, obviously. I'm on this job now that's an HBO show. It's in its second season, so I think I can name it. It's called Love Life, HBO Max. It's a show about young people pursuing romance in New York City, which I know is something of a well-worn territory. But I think it's actually well-written, and it's going to be a good show. It is a good show, and this season's going to be
good. Does it revolve around themes of, say, sex and, I don't know, the city?
Well, okay.
Yeah, you see what I did there, right? Yeah.
I see there. Boy, are you clever with the media references. But no, the first season was, yes, about a young woman pursuing love in the city. Its unique thing, though, is it followed her through 10 different years, and each episode was an advancing year. So by episode 10, you saw her get married. That's not a spoiler alert. The show, season one, is on HBO Max. So that was it. And it was Anna Kendrick starring as the young woman. And it had a lot of those things of, you know, scenes in clubs and, you know, all the things you have seen in a lot of other shows like Girls or Sex in the City or another one I did called High Fidelity. But it was really well written and clever and so forth. This season, they're going to put a twist on it, and it's already been announced in the media. So the focus is going to be on a young black man played by, oh, I forget his name. He played Chidi in The Good Place. You've seen The Good Place, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, the guy who played Chidi, he's going to be sort of the center. We meet him at Anna Kendrick's wedding, and then for the rest of the season, the show's about him, and we don't see Anna Kendrick any longer. So every season of this show, and as long as I'm employed on it, you know, may there be many, we'll feature a different person pursuing romantic relationships through a course of time in the New York City area, Brooklyn or what have you. So, you know, it's a half an hour. It's not life-changing, but it's a well-crafted, fun, good time, I think. And it's keeping old Mr. Fisher employed through August. And it's also meaning that I have to drive into Brooklyn back and forth every day. So hence, I haven't been able to make appearances lately on the show. And I mean, I guess off the air, but it's so fun being. You'll forgive me for not calling sooner until it's. For
oh, absolutely. You had a couple of dropouts there, but.
We are changing internet services on Saturday, by the way. We're switching to Verizon from T-Mobile, which our local T-Mobile has been just not great. And that's not an advertisement or endorsement. I'm sure T-Mobile or Verizon can be great or horrible, depending on your...
Well, but, you know, that dovetails... You're so good at that. That dovetails with one of the earlier stories in the program. Because T-Mobile is back to giving money to the Insurrection Caucus.
Oh, yeah, there is that. Well, I could pretend to be an SJW and say that we're quitting T-Mobile because of that. But it's mainly just because their local service here in Rockland County, New York, has been wanting. And so if I drop out here and there, it's because of T-Mobile and, you know, they had it coming.
Well, yeah, but, you know, one of the problems with wireless internet, generally speaking, is that all of these cell phone companies do the same damn thing, Dan.
Yeah.
When they come into a market, of course, they've got their infrastructure, and it's largely untapped and untaxed. I don't mean fiscally. I mean the infrastructure is not particularly busy.
Mm-hmm.
But then they go out and they deliberately, you know, just like an airline deliberately overbooks a flight.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever been through that misery, but what a joy that is.
Well, who hasn't?
They oversell their territory.
Yes.
They deliberately sell more time than they can physically provide.
I see.
And I like I said, all of them do it.
Uh-huh.
But it's infuriating.
Well, the thing is this, you know, I don't have the means to just, you know, go down to my garage and get a bunch of tools and make something that'll work for myself.
No.
Like you and me, you know, we're all dependent on these guys. We got, you know, if they're all doing the same thing, you know, and we all need it, we're all going to have to go to
one. Some networks are better than others. I experienced briefly T-Mobile when I was down in Northwest Alabama back between December 2019 and January 2020. And they were ballyhooing the fact that they were rolling out 5G.
Right.
They sucked. They sucked with a mighty sucking. And I didn't last a day with them before I'd gone to somebody else.
Wow. I don't know. We'll see. I want to give everybody a fair chance. And you know, you did bring up the point about T-Mobile and their contributions. That is something that I do pay attention to and try in at least minor ways to influence my consumer spending. Because, you know, you were talking about corporations earlier. Corporations are people, my friend, and all that. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of struck me lately is in some odd ways, and forgive me, Jesus, for saying this, but, you know, corporations have almost become the good guy on some issues, you know, more than, let's say, the government, you know, in that with Black Lives Matter and the Georgia and the, you know, the Charvel verdict and everything. I mean, some corporations have shown at least that token message of support. Now, granted, it's because they want you to buy more Coca-Cola or they want you to buy more auto tires or something. But even that, I mean, it's whenever even a token bit of symbolic way to go, guys, comes out from a corporation, that's more than you can expect from Mitch McConnell. And it also shows that they're listening. They're realizing that maybe the market is, you know, the majority of us did vote for Joe Biden over Donald Trump. I mean, the majority of us voted for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump.
That's true.
There's more of us than them. There are more of us than them, and we buy stuff. So, you know, this whole thing of old cancel culture and all that. Well, you want to call it cancel culture? I mean, I call it like, you know what? If I don't want to give my money to a company that does bad things, I don't have to, because there are plenty of other products of a similar nature that I can give my money to. And if I find out that a favorite filmmaker of mine, you know, sexually harassed or assaulted or raped a woman, I don't have to watch that person's movies anymore. I really can live the rest of my life without seeing a Woody Allen movie again. I mean, I love a lot of his movies, but I've seen pretty much all of them, and I've seen them a lot of times, and some are great and some suck, but I don't have to see any more. You know, now that I know, and now that I've formed my opinion based on what I've seen of evidence, like, I don't need that. I don't need Bill Cosby. I don't need Louis C.K. I don't need MyPillow. I don't need – there's a lot of stuff I don't need, and all I have to do is just don't give them my money. And that's a form of voting these days. Our being part of the corporate system is, in a way, casting a vote. You know, even if I go to the movies, when I go to the movies and hand over my $12 for a ticket, in a way, that's a vote. I'm saying, more of this, please. I like this. Let's have more of that. And if something makes enough money, ideally, you get more of that. So I'm all for the idea of, you know what, if Congress is going to be, you know, by its nature, relatively inactive and relatively out of the communication range of Joe Main Street, you know, let's vote with our dollars. Let's vote that way, because that seems to be that's the way things run anyway, right? We are a corporatocracy as much as we are a democracy. So if you can't beat them, I guess join them. Am I going?
No. You're right. And frankly,
I mean, I hate these words coming out of my mouth, but they seem to make sense.
No, I've argued for years that consumer choices are moral choices.
Absolutely.
We seem to have gotten to a point where maybe more people understand that. I mean, I loved the other day the video footage, I presume you saw it, of Joe Biden driving the Ford electric truck.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, yeah, I mean.
What did he say to the reporter? This sucker's quick.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that there is such distrust over, you know, government, whatever people define government as. I don't know if it's ever really been seen as, you know, of the people, by the people, for the people, you know, any of that. I think now it's looked at government is a thing, is a them, and we are us. And very rarely, you know, only by the Constitution does the government have to listen to us at least, you know, every couple of years by our voting people in and out. But overall, I think people trust Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Amazon more than they do, you know, the House of Representatives or the Senate or the President. You know, that's they know what they when they go to McDonald's, they know what a Big Mac tastes like, and they know that they can get one. And so, if we say at the same time, McDonald's, we want you to back BLM. We want you to work harder at reducing your carbon monoxide emissions and greenhouse gases. You know, we can if we really try do something about that with our dollars. But I mean, people love hamburgers, so good luck with that too. I realize.
But I did want to ask you, Dan, because I sort of took your name in vain earlier.
Thou shalt not. But okay.
Yeah, but you more than I, you have a right to be absolutely infuriated by these people who spread this bilious horse shit about the vaccines being dangerous. Was I wrong in making that assumption that just infuriates you?
You know what? It infuriates me. It exasperates me. It's, you know, I think I've used this metaphor many times on your show. I feel oftentimes like I'm just, an old man yelling at the sky, or I'm yelling at the rain to stop, and the rain is just ignoring me. And it goes back to the thing we've also talked a lot about, which is that we are in an age now of, when it comes to facts and truth and knowledge, it's choose your own adventure time. You know, choose whatever lane you want. And if you don't like the facts, just make up whatever fact suits you and repeat it often enough. And especially if you're given a microphone, such as an elected position or, you know, a position of celebrity and a certain amount of followers on social media. Well, you know, it becomes conventional wisdom in no time. You know, it really doesn't take that much. I mean, there are people that still believe the Richard Gere and the gerbil story or the Rod Stewart story, you know.
I thought that was I thought that was the David Bowie and Mick Jagger story.
There's all of those. Social media has existed as long as people have been social and want to tell each other shit. But of course, now it's on hypersteroids. And you got people. Was that Marjorie Bobblehead? That wasn't Marjorie Bobblehead. It was I forget who it was that was on. Was it on Stu Peters where she was talking?
No, that was Deanna Lorraine talking to Stu Peters. Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley was talking to Dr. Gina.
You see, they are, after a while,
I can't keep up with. No, they all run together.
As they might say of people of color, they all look alike. These Karens, these KK Karens, as I think you have labeled them.
Yes.
They all are of a certain mold and a certain pushback, and I think it's all for dollars. I don't think even they believe most of the shit they spew.
Well, I think it would be nice if you could, especially with Stu Peters' braised buttocks, and Deanna Lorraine. Get in there and find their, just hack something and find their fucking shot records and just, you know, remove their credit. Well, credibility is the wrong word, isn't it, Dan?
Well, you see, that's the thing, though, too. It's like you've seen A Face in the Crowd, right? You've seen that movie.
Oh, yes.
Right? And the ending to Face in the Crowd where, you know, Andy Griffith was caught on, you know, he didn't know the microphone was on, and he's calling his fans stupid and all that stuff. And, I can put them in the palm of my hand whenever I want. They'll do anything I tell them. And then the next day, of course, everybody's turning his back on him, and he's left all alone at the top of his penthouse shouting for Patricia Neal, Marsha, come back! Well, you know, you can't – I don't know if that was even realistic then, but it sure as hell
– It doesn't happen that – well – let's be clear. It doesn't happen on the right wing, Dan.
No, because, again, choose your own.
It happens. It happens on our side. You know, Al Franken is still in exile, more or less. I mean, he's got a podcast now.
Yeah. I mean, I actually got into it with some liberal friends of mine because I don't think Al Franken should come back. But that's another lane we can go down if we wish. I know that there was more than one accuser. There were eight accusers of Al Franken, and it wasn't an isolated incident that was a joke. You know, there's more serious than that. But anyway, and as much as I think Al Franken was a fantastic senator, I think he showed he's not such a great human being. And yeah, it's not fair that we have to sort of take the high road and avoid the low road and all the stuff that Michelle Obama said. But I'm going to keep fighting for us to be the party of integrity and of real morals, the real moral majority. And we are the majority. We got to keep coming back to that. There are more of us than there are of them. They may be meaner. They cheat.
Absolutely.
They make up shit and claim that's fact. And then if you try to present fact to them, you get that it's liberal media. You know, where did you get your information from? Here's my information. Well, you know, a doctor, you know, Dr. Fauci. And, you know, it's like no matter what you do, facts will be disputed. And so you going back to the answer to your question, do I feel infuriated? Not just on this issue of vaccinations and my personal stake in it, but I get infuriated daily by a simple refusal to accept that the sky is blue anymore. And I don't know what to do about that. And it may just – the toothpaste may just be out of the tube to just keep throwing out metaphors.
Well, okay. So quite often, Dan, when we talk about and I hate the phrase fake news.
Me too.
I despise it. But it always comes back to usually Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. Or Twitter, you know, social media generally. But I think it's a fair question to ask, is that really? I mean, is that really the origin? Because I'm old enough that I remember the early days of Flush Flimball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And
I mean,
he's been making shit up for, he made shit up for a generation.
Yeah, there's a lot of people driving around in their cars with time on their hands. And they wanted somebody who would reinforce a lot of stuff that they believed. Sometimes they didn't even say because they knew it was socially frowned upon. And they found a guy at first with Rush and then later on with an entire network and then Donald Trump and lots of other surrogates who were willing to say the bad stuff that they don't dare to say. And then Trump told them, hey, you don't even have to be ashamed of saying that. Just say it. I say it. You can too. And that hence you've got – you know, what you have now. You know, there's always been hate and ugliness and cheating and lies, you know, forever. It's just now become much more vocal. And yes, I know the Democrats and the liberals, we're not immune to the lies. We're not immune to being mean. But it does seem like you can't really, at least in the past, whatever, you can't really both sides the issue of when it comes to adherence to fact, to adherence of an idea of a real moral code, that is of compassion for everybody, not just people who look like us, and acceptance that things are constantly evolving. You know, evolution isn't just a matter of biological principle that liberals tend to believe, that is of Charles Darwin and so on. I think we believe in evolution of language, and I think overall, we believe in evolution of ideas, that nothing stays constant, you know. And you and I have talked again. And look, you personally, you have evolved, right? And you and I have talked about even things like pronouns and how things, words and different phrases. Is it, you know, this year are we to say people of color?
Dan, I'm learning so much.
You and me both. We're straight white men, cisgender men. No, I'm not. Don't you're not. We were born cisgender white men. You transformed into the woman you believed you were always meant to be. But at the very least, we were the default. We were born default, I should say. And I always say that word too. We were born default and believed a certain thing. We were told a certain thing by our teachers, by our parents, by our churches, by our friends. This is the world. These are the rules and live by them. And what we've learned through our lives, you and me and many of your listeners, is that, the rules are constantly shifting, and that's not a terrible thing. We can't keep clutching to things because we're comfortable with them, because guess what? Oftentimes it comes at the expense of people who are not comfortable with them. So the whole thing of cancel culture and, you can't say anything funny anymore because you might offend somebody. It's like, well, no, you can. There's plenty of funny people out there.
Oh, the Joe Rogan complaint? Yeah.
Yeah. He has 200 million followers, and he complains about being canceled. And even, you know, even comedians I like a lot, like I like Gilbert Gottfried, but on his podcast, he'll say about it, well, you can't say this anymore. It's like, well, you can, Gilbert, but you can't expect people to laugh maybe as much as they used to, or as many people laugh at something that teeters in racism or sexism. And you can't blame the audience if they don't laugh. Any professional comedian should know that. It's not the audience's fault if they don't find you funny. It just means you're not giving them what they want, and you have to find a way to make them.
And you know what? The thing that you mentioned, the Joe Rogaine thing, Dan. Let's assume for a moment that he did get canceled, and the whole world just said, "I'm not going to listen to Pink Shrek anymore." Dude's got $100 million. I'm pretty sure he could find something to do for the rest of his natural born days that would probably be pretty engaging.
Well, to quote Jack Nicholson in Chinatown, I'm going to trot out my bad Jack Nicholson impression. How much food do you really need to eat?
You know, it just so happens that you don't need to do your bad Jack Nicholson, which was not that bad, because I got Jack right here.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
That? Yeah.
That's a really great Jack Nicholson impression.
Because, you know, it's, yeah, I know. But, you know, there's that. But on the other hand, this business about being funny, and, you know, you've worked in film, and you know from funny.
I appreciate funny.
And something I've said in the past, for instance, and the thing that I go back to is, and they both involve Richard Pryor. You know, Richard Pryor had a huge hand in writing Blazing Saddles.
Yes, he did.
Which is start to finish, at least by my lights, hilarious.
Yeah.
And then there's the, you know, and he co-hosted Saturday Night Live a few times. And there is that one sketch between him and Chevy Chase where Chevy Chase is doing word association. You know, it's a sketch. There's an office. It's Chevy Chase is a shrink or something. And they're doing word association. And Chevy Chase just verges closer and closer and closer to just absolute, pure white supremacist, racist trash.
Yes.
And Richard gets more and more and more irate.
Yes.
Until he gets to the dead honky.
Honky honky.
And I've made the argument in the past that, you know, you can't do that comedy anymore. And I don't know if I'm right. I may be wrong. It may just be that that comedy doesn't happen anymore because we are, at this point in time, we're fresh out of Richard Pryor's.
And maybe the point that was made from that sketch, and even the point that was made from Blazing Saddles, that point has been made and made better than anybody else could. I mean, Blazing Saddles is as much a testament against racism as it is that it uses jokes, you know, where characters say terrible things about Sheriff Hart and use that word. I don't think that acts of fiction that have racist characters, I personally, as not only as a cisgender white man, but as a person who writes and is part of a creative process, I think villains have to be villainous and assholes have to be assholes. And if a fictional character in a narrative says that word, if a white character uses the N-word in, let's say, Mississippi Burning, or Chevy Chase in Saturday Night Live uses that word in that context, I think it has to be allowed. And if in future works of art or entertainment, if somebody makes something that challenges an idea or uses a word that may or may not be appropriate, I think it's just simply a matter of you have to put it out there. You always, I think, have to have the right and the means to put something out there. You also have to be ready.
I was jarred. I mean, I find it jarring. I find it jarring when I hear those words. I recoil naturally.
Yeah. But what we've learned too from the Republicans is that they have become grandmasters at saying the word without saying the word.
Yeah.
So it's not just a word that's weaponized. It's the ideas and the concepts, like the word thug. like pull your pants up, like all these different tropes that I've seen well-meaning, supposedly liberal friends of mine use, because there's racism in all of us, and there are things that bug us about other people, whether fairly or not fairly. Sometimes we are each bad people. Sometimes I'm unconsciously sexist. I will always be that because I'm a human being, and I'm gonna always try to attempt to not be those things. But I'm sure sometime in the course of a joke or in a gesture, I'm gonna do something that's gonna piss somebody off, and it's up to that person. It's gonna have to be, I'm afraid, up to some person to call me out on it and say, hey, you know what? That was racist. You didn't think it was, but I think it was, and it's up to me to listen and accept, or a sexist thing. I'm going to confess something on the air. One of the most deeply shamed moments of my life, one of the things I regret in my life, is I was at a rap party a long time ago, and I was singing a song karaoke, and a woman from the audience during the instrumental break and I danced together, and as a quote-unquote joke, I put my hand on her ass, like, ha ha, look what I can do. I had a few drinks in me, but that's not the fault of the alcohol. That was me being an asshole and having a misguided idea of what was funny. And I was wrong. And I probably can't run for public office now, having made that. But I hope you can understand by my bringing that up, that I'm pointing out that I'm not just being a justice warrior here, a social justice warrior who's trying to always, you know, proclaim my own virtue. I'm willing to proclaim my own sins, you know? I mean, that's something that's based maybe in Christianity, that we are all born with sin, right? And we should always be constantly looking for means to clean ourselves of that sin and to atone for our sins, if we can, in positive action, in ways that can make things better for the people we victimized and the people that are, you know, that may be victimized, not even by me, but by anybody in the future. So, you know, that's my sin to confess for the night. I once put my hand on a woman's ass in public. But my wife was there. She saw how stupid and wrong. And what was going through my fucking mind, I can't tell you. But like Al Franken in that moment on the plane, I thought for a minute, wouldn't this be funny? And it was not funny. It was never funny. Wouldn't have been funny no matter what. It was wrong. So how's about that?
Well, you know what? It takes both courage and grace to do something to talk about something like that.
Right.
And sure. I think that speaks to your essential core decency.
Well, that's all I can do. And whether or not it's decent or whether it's just something that should be normal in any of us, you know, I can't, the fact is I can't reverse it. I can't reverse my mistakes. All I can do is try to atone for them. And I didn't even have to publicly admit that tonight, but I had that impulse.
Yeah.
And I hope it's the right impulse, and I hope that
So I take it that all the complaints about critical race theory in the 1619 Project don't resonate with you either.
Why are people afraid of facts? Why are we, you know, why, if you know, slavery's over, get over it and all that, the people that say that are the same people saying, well, statues are history. Well, no, history is history. And when we know things, we should be able to accept that yes, that happened. And yes, it was wrong then, it will always be wrong, and there's no rationalizing. Well, some of the slaves were treated like family. It's like, no, they weren't, because family, you don't usually rape your families. You don't usually...
Right, and families generally aren't confined to the plantation, and families generally aren't periodically auctioned off.
Right. Families are not property. Families have the right to decide whether or not they're going to live with you or not. And if my daughter goes off to move somewhere, I'm not going to hire bounty hunters to bring her back. It's not going to happen. So, no. I mean, this is all, we know this. I'm not saying anything revelatory here. Yeah, duh, slavery is bad. I mean, true, movies have won Academy Awards for making that same basic statement, racism is bad. But no, not a fan of the idea that not only do some people frown upon the 1619 Project and look at it as propaganda, but they are, they're actively passing laws saying you can't even teach or discuss these what actually happened, you know? And the funny thing is, too, is that, you know, these people who are enacting these laws and have spoken out, I mean, if you were to look at, let's say, the school textbooks of Mitch McConnell or Marjorie Bobblehead or Gates or any of those people who are, you know, express their Fox-friendly views on this sort of so-called propaganda, if you'd look at their grade school and high school textbooks, I'm sure you'd find lots of whitewashing of history. And, you know, maybe the Civil War gets three pages and they talk about how it's, you know, it was all about states' rights, you know. And those people were also, you know, grew up thinking that Gone with the Wind was the greatest movie in the universe. You know, you can't be afraid of truth. You know, what I just said, what I just told your listeners and you, that was truth. And I can't be, you know, I'm ashamed of it, but I can't be afraid of it. It happened. You know, and this idea, too, that you can't love America, you can't be a true patriot unless you see America as perfect in every way, as superior to all nations in every regard. That's just silly. It's like saying I can't be in love with my wife if I've ever fought with her, if I've ever gotten mad at her, if I've ever criticized her, I don't really love her. No, I love her with everything I have. But sometimes she drives me fucking nuts. And sometimes she says things that I vehemently disagree with. But that's what love is, Charlie Brown. You know, when you accept the imperfections and you stick around anyway, and you back up that person no matter what anyway. You know, if somebody goes after my wife, I'm going after them. Even though she does sometimes drive me nuts and I drive her nuts. You know, because that's us, we're together. And that's the way, you know, I do consider it. I hate this idea that Democrats or liberals or whatever you want to call us, that unless you believe a certain way, you're not a quote unquote patriot. You know, why don't we get to wave? Why don't we get to put up the American flag outside our houses? You know, if I put an American flag up beside my house, it's almost a signal to the maggots that I'm with you guys. And it's not. I am with you in terms of an American, and I believe in America, and I'm patriotic as hell. I just don't believe that everything we've done is perfect.
No, and I think we are. Isn't it safe to say that we are a better nation when we confront our failings?
I think so, because we only get better. It's evolving. Again, we're constantly evolving based on the knowledge that we have, and also our acceptance of knowledge. You know, racism has been around forever. Cops have been shooting unarmed black people forever. Women have been treated shit like shit and have been sexually assaulted on a regular basis as long as there have been women. And then we've known this. We just don't accept it the same way as we once did or ignore it the same way as we once did. It's one of the good things about social media is there's just more stuff out there. And, you know, everybody's carrying around a camera now. I think the iPhone has saved lives because everybody's got a camera.
Right. And as compared with, say, you know, we thought putting body cameras on all the cops would make such a big difference. But as long as local governments and state and national governments, for that matter, have the ability to squirrel that footage away, then it's not that helpful. You only get the prosecution of Derek Chauvin for murdering George Floyd because people, and you know, take a moment and note the courage.
Yes,
required to stand there and film, video these people with guns while they're engaged in an overt crime.
Yeah, it is. It's tremendous. It's
recall that the person who recorded the killing of Eric Garner in New York City.
Yeah.
That dude was prosecuted.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are actually heroic acts, Dan. And need to be recognized as such. And they are patriotic acts.
Yes, they are. Because we, the people, we're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And the fact that we ask, you know, that we say, hey, you know, we really think we should study and investigate exactly how January 6th came around. And the fact that there is an entire political party whose response to that is, not unless we get to investigate them Black Lives Matter, Antifa, Rosicrucians. I don't understand the mentality of the people for whom that is a successful argument.
Well, again, to quote Jack Nicholson, they can't handle the truth. They know what the truth is. I seriously doubt, no matter what the polls tell you, I seriously doubt any more than, let's say, 10% of the American population. They have to know, they have to accept that Antifa and BLM really were not behind the insurrection. You know, I mean, for all I know, it's like 50% of Republicans do think that. But real, or at least they say that in the polls. But I don't think they really think that. I don't think they really believe it. They just know. They're going to just keep throwing on another log on the fire until everything burns. It's just more and more horseshit.
Well, and that brings up another question. What is their end game, Dan? What do they want?
They want people to forget, and they want people to vote in 2022 and 2024 for their side. Which, again, they know they're losing power in that. They know that we are the majority. We're just the numerical majority, and our numbers are only going up. And they have to find just at least to hold on to their jobs, you know, for Mitch and Matt and all the others to just stay employed and not have to go on the Fox News as an analyst, you know, and to get all that sweet, sweet lobbying money. They have to stay employed, and that means they have to – whatever the nut jobs say, you know, they're looking at those polls. And if the nut jobs say 52% of Republicans say that, you know, that Joe Biden cheated to win, well, that's what they're going to go with, too. And they know it's not true, but they're going to say it because they want to hold on to their jobs. They know that getting, God, I didn't even want to say his name, by getting he who shall not be named mad can produce, enough of a social media thunderstorm that maybe you lose your job or you lose your committeeship just because, you know, there are still people out there who are genuflecting before their golden god.
Jesus, you had to remind me of the golden god at what was that, CPAC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I swear, I know you grew up in the same era. I swear, Dan, I swear that was a repurposed big boy.
Only big boy is lovable.
Yeah, they painted gold lacquered over his red and white checkered, you know, the bib overalls or whatever it was, and that's the first thing I thought. That's a fucking big boy.
Well, I'd much rather think of big boy than he who shall not be named.
Well, indeed.
Yeah. Big boy was where I. When I was a kid, we always get to pick the restaurants that we'd go to on our birthday, and I always picked Big Boy. I like the Big Boy.
Did you get the burger?
Oh, yeah, because if you could eat the whole thing, that meant you were a big boy. And that's what I aspired to be.
My thing with, you know, they were famous for a time for their strawberry pie.
Yeah.
I was never a big strawberry, I was never big into their strawberry pie, but my God, the hot fudge cake. God, I could put down some hot fudge cake.
I also like the just the Coca-Cola and the glass. There's something about the Coke there and the ice. It just tasted different. It tasted best. It was the best tasting Coke. It was that Coke in a big frosty
fountain
glass.
Coke. Fountain Coke.
Fountain Coke.
Because it was having the carbonated water added. You know, with that original Coca-Cola, not original, there's no cocaine in it, but yeah. that sickly sweet, wonderful, and it did. It tasted better.
Yeah. Yeah, the worst way to drink Coke is out of a can, just straight from the can.
Yeah, it's almost gritty.
Yeah, it just doesn't taste right.
Which is so funny for me, though, because I can't remember the last, well, I think, no, maybe I think I had a pop. Maybe in the last 2 weeks, but I'm almost, and I absolutely love it. I probably go through 4 liters of ice water a day.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that's conscious because I'm trying to take off weight.
Right.
And I'm really annoyed and embarrassed at myself for allowing my A1C to get up to 8.5. Some of it is biochemically not my fault. But some of it damn sure is. the Robin eats the world part because she quit smoking cigarettes. That's on me. But it also, that's chemical too, because it slowed my metabolism.
Right. And we know that Diet Coke doesn't really help you lose weight. And Coke itself, I mean, I haven't had a non-Diet Coke in, I don't know, a decade, something like that, probably because of the sugar and the caffeine. I have cheated here and there with Diet Cokes, but it's all poison. I shouldn't do any of it. Really.
It is, but I confess, you know, one of the weird things, and I've mentioned this on the program, one of the things about the pandemic is, you know, there was a metal shortage,
right?
Particularly an aluminum shortage for a while.
Yes, that's true.
And my drug of choice, if you will, where all that stuff is concerned, was caffeine-free Coke Zero. Because it tasted so like an original Coca-Cola that you almost couldn't tell the difference, or at least I couldn't. So, and it's gone. I haven't seen it since March of 2020.
Well, I was going to say you're going to tempt me into hunting that down, but if I don't have it, I won't. I don't miss it. But let's. I guess I want to segue it back into angry politics or something.
Okay.
Because, like, here's an example, right?
Oh, and by the way, I have to, before you go there, let me just tell you something Kyle said a minute ago.
Okay.
It sure is nice to hear a conversation between two rational people. Isn't that just lovely?
Well, thank you. I aspire toward rationality. It's a goal, just as adequacy is for you, my friend. And you attain it on a regular basis, I would imagine.
I live every day for my own adequacy. It inspires me to get out of bed in the morning, Dan.
Oh, man, just being adequate is enough, isn't it? Sometimes, you know. But, you know, if we know that the COVID, the pandemic, which is still ongoing, we still, A, accept that it's ongoing, and, B, we know that it still has an impact not only on the health and the mortality of human beings planet-wide, including Americans, but we also know that it's cut into profits in the economy in a major way. So I would think that it's in corporate America's interests to promote the vaccine as much as possible, right?
Right.
I mean, beside the fact that getting the vaccine has somehow become politicized, which if that's the train you're going to ride on, you know. I brought this up on Facebook earlier and people shot me down, and I understand why. But I do think it would be really cool if there were a way for, like, the Walmarts and the Coca-Colas, especially those kind of products, McDonald's, to say, like, you know what, if you come in McDonald's and you can show us your vaccine card, you get 10% off. You know, free six-pack of Coke the next time you come in and show your card. You know, or Walmart simply says, if you can show your card, you can take the mask off. If you can't show a card, or if we suspect a card has been Photoshopped, and I also happen to believe that most maggots, I just have this prejudice that most of them are really bad at Photoshop anyway. probably not true, but I'd like to
show up with a COVID vaccine certificate signed by Epstein's mom.
If we could really just find a way to appeal to their inner greedy, gluttonous, fat, slobby American selves, as not only, you know, and God knows again, not just Republicans have a hold on that kind of thing, but, you know, Democrats, so we could shed a few pounds too. But again, if we just appeal to that, maybe, I know I'm not going to change the hearts and minds of anti-vaxxers. I've tried. It's just putting my head against a brick wall over and over and over and over. But if we could appeal to their love of hamburgers and Coca-Cola and Walmart, maybe some people will get it just to get that sweet 10% discount or to not have to wear a mask in Walmart. You know, I know people are can forge the cards, but, you know, maybe some will be like Ms. Goofball there on that show was saying, you know, who is throwing a little tantrum because she might have to sit in a different section than the majority of sane people. It's crazy. And maybe you've already put this quote in your program somewhere along the line. Again, I apologize for not listening for a while, but, you know, a famous person recently expressed criticism or skepticism and said, doesn't know why Republicans are hesitant to get inoculated, saying, I don't know what it is exactly. I encourage people to take it. I do. This celebrity is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has endorsed the vaccine. And, you know, maybe, listen, maybe too, shh, don't tell him, okay? But maybe if we get Donald Trump to believe that we're willing to give him credit for the vaccine, right?
Yeah.
Because all he ever wants is credit. If we say that we're giving Donald Trump credit for the vaccine, maybe that'll get people to take the vaccine because it's supporting Donald Trump. And we know that, you know, he doesn't deserve at least all the credit. Okay, you know, maybe they put some money, more money into the development again on, you know, what was it called, Operation Warp Speed? I don't know. But I'm willing to give him a little bit of credit if that gets some of the maggots on board to show us liberals, you know, that hey, you know, Donald Trump did this, so fuck you liberals, I'm getting the vaccine.
If we could get him to get vaccinated to own the libs, I would happily be owned.
Own the hell out of me, as long as you don't kill me. I don't care if you think you've owned me. I know that I'm not owned, but if you want to believe that, go ahead and own me. But get a friggin' vaccine. And listen, I hate to say it too, but it's not all maggots who are anti-vaxxers. I have two people in my family, very close to me. I'm not going to name their names because I love them. They're not maggots. I think in general they see themselves as not very political. They each claim to me that they did not vote for Trump in the last election, but at the same time, neither one of them are getting the vaccine. And I love them dearly, but I'm not going to see them until they do. And we haven't had that discussion yet, but we're going to have that discussion. When summer comes around and they ask me, maybe Danny should come down to West Virginia and see some of the relatives, I'm not going to see them until they get a vaccine. And, you know, their thing is just like, well, I heard. You know, there's a lot of I heards out there. I heard that this and that. And
I heard they pay the hospital $15,100 billion for every person that they list as having died of the COVID.
Well, there's also a lot of I heard from my cousin that a friend of hers died after getting the vaccine, got blood clots and died. I've had people on Facebook insist to me that they got blood clots after getting the vaccine. And it's the same. That's why they're anti-vax or a vaccine of some sort. And, you know, they're strangers on the Internet. They can be lying. They can tell them the truth. But what we know from statistics is that blood clots are rare, but they are present in some of the statistics that have come up with some of the vaccines.
Right.
Not all. You know, we have to accept science for what it is. And right now the science is saying, yeah, it has happened. It's rare. It's happened, but you're better off. You're smarter getting the vaccine and shutting down, being part of the solution to this humongous problem, which has cursed us for a year and a half.
And we want and we want free of it. And that's why I was talking earlier about this Deanna Lorraine twit and Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. You know, she's unvaccinated.
Right.
But she wants to take off her mask, you know, because we did all the hard work. If there's risk involved with the vaccine, we took it, and so she wants to take advantage of the risk that we took.
It would help me pick my bread, said Henny Penny.
Right.
Remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
Not me.
I mean, it's like the people who, you know, because of Supreme Court rulings and the like, there are people who are members of unions and get union pay, but don't pay union dues.
Right.
You know, they're just leeches.
Yes, they are. That free stuff that we're supposedly all for.
Yeah. But they're not saying, oh, no, I want shit wages, please. You know, y'all go out and take the beatings because, you know, and I mentioned it on yesterday's program because Joey brought it up, and I thought of you. Because yesterday was the anniversary of Mate One, the 100th anniversary of Mate One.
Wow, I didn't know that. I did not know that. But I wouldn't have known it unless I worked on Mate One, because I don't think we were told about it in my West Virginia history class.
I had never heard of it until I watched the movie, and I grew up in a coal mining family.
I located recently on eBay a copy of West Virginia, what's it called? West Virginia, The People and Places by, I forget the guy's name, Jack O. something or other. And it's pretty expensive. I'm waiting to try to find a cheap copy of it. I want to buy my eighth grade West Virginia history textbook, and I want to see what it was they told us and see how much they left out. And I'm curious what they said about the Civil War, given that that's how the state formed in the, from the Civil War and being part choosing up sides as we did with the Union. I'm curious. So at some point, if it gets down to around like $25, if I can find it somewhere, I'll buy it. Because again, history is what people tell you unless
and some parts of it was brutally suppressed. I mean, Matewan and the Miners' March on Logan, the Battle of Blair Mountain, happened 100 years ago this year. My parents were born in the 1920s, and they actually were wandering around Thurmond when Matewan was being shot entirely by accident.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not the film was shot by accident. I mean, they were there by accident. And they were intelligent people, and neither one of them had ever heard of it. And again, my dad grew up in a coal camp, and he had never heard of it. It was brutally suppressed.
Yep.
As is so often the case with labor history.
Right.
There were, as many as a thousand men, mostly African Americans, died digging a tunnel that's, 4 miles from me.
Mm.
And until it was made a part of history in the last 20, 30 years, 40 years, that was suppressed because Union Carbide didn't want people to know that they had killed that many people. And then they turned around and did Bhopal.
See, so it is true that what the truth is, I mean, we can't idealize our past too much by saying, well, at one time we all accepted what was true. And what we when Walter Cronkite came on and gave us the news, we all accepted that as the truth. I mean, the fact is that facts have been suppressed as long as people have been able to communicate with one another. You know, even you or I, if we run into somebody, if you or I have an altercation in the supermarket with somebody who, let's say, won't wear a mask, and we say what we say, and that person says what they said, and so forth and so on, by the time we get home and we relay that story to our significant others who are our friends at work, we've altered the story a bit to make it ourselves the heroes of it. And even if we were right, in this case, wearing a mask and not wearing a mask, facts, whatever, it's natural, it's human impulse to spiff up the story a little bit, to create heroes and villains and very clear-cut narratives. And so history has always done that. And when corporations control history, like the oil and coal companies did in West Virginia, They're sure not going to, really promote the idea of unionism in the history books given to eighth grade students, or the Daughters of the American Confederacy sure as heck are going to put up those statues proclaiming that, Confederate soldiers were heroes, and also have a tremendous impact on how textbooks all across America told the story of what the Civil War was and what it was about. There are lots of forces that stand to benefit from controlling what information was. And now, to go back to the commission and what the Republicans are trying to do in just, totally torpedoing it, it's because this just happened 3 months ago. This happened January 6th. We all saw it on our televisions. We all were there. And yet what has been happening already is what you think you saw, you didn't really see. It was Antifa. It was BLM. It was tourists. The people were hugging police officers. They weren't attacking them. They were telling them how much they loved them. There's all these different counter narratives to what we saw. We can't help but see that.
And there was a story out of L.A. on Wednesday that I mentioned last night, and it's exactly the opposite, because when the maggots say those were more like tourists, that Representative Clyde clown, they're projecting, Dan. They're projecting, and they also are deeply engaged in misinformation. As I mentioned last night, I think back to the AutoZone that was attacked just as the George Floyd protests were beginning to coalesce. And it came out that that was a known right-wing provocateur, a white guy, and it appeared and then disappeared from the media almost immediately, never to be mentioned again. And so last night, Wednesday night, in the midst of the Israeli-Palestinian hostilities, there's video from downtown L.A., sidewalk diners at a sushi joint, and a couple of carloads of assholes go by, and they've got a giant Palestinian flag, and they're yelling about the Jews! And then they get out of their cars and they come down the sidewalk and start hitting people. And the headline reads, "Pro-Palestinians attack Jewish diners." Well, the video's not great, Dan. But the guys that were doing the attacking were behaving for all the world like Proud Boys. Dressed like Proud Boys. Screaming like Proud Boys. Fat like Proud Boys. And the
were
thing,
white Proud Boys?
Pinker than me. And there was that, and you know, there was the, so the headline was there, but there was nothing to support it in the body of the story. And this is from a major TV station in LA, and it was picked up and carried as, pardon the term, gospel truth. When it just isn't there. And the reporting, it's not just that it was picked up and shared around by right-wing news sites, as was pointed out by Steve in New York last night. It is the fact that the original report shows such a profound want of curiosity. Some cub reporter or whatever at KTLA just sits there and bangs out the little story, and they stick the headline on it, and it gets the clicks.
And he can wind up on a couple of different news shows, live remote feeds talking about, and next thing you know, the legend becomes the fact, right?
Yeah. And now back to Bill in the Weather Center.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's disturbing because it just looked so obviously, mine is a trained eye, Dan. It's not that I'm some sort of hardcore skeptic. It's just that, through the process of being a prosecuting attorney, I had to investigate the investigations that the cops would bring me. I had to find the holes in my own cases. And then as a trained journalist, before and after, more of the same. And it's just exasperating because people swallow and again, what you said repeatedly in this conversation is true here. No side is completely we are certainly not absolved from this. We are not without blame. I've been duped a couple of times.
Sure.
And you feel real sheepish, Dan. Meh.
Wake up then, sheeple.
Yeah, right. But this just seems so patently obvious. And that's, when there isn't an agreed upon set of what the facts are, your reference to Walter Cronkite a little bit ago, then I think in some ways that's how democracy dies. Because we cannot, we cannot agree on our own narrative. We can't agree on our own mythology. We can't agree on our own history, our own origin story. And then within one country, as we have seen so clearly, we become multiple divided subsets of people with Venn diagram overlaps here and there.
Yeah. I think that's fair. That's all fair to say. I mean, you asked me earlier again, am I infuriated? you know, in this case with the anti-vaxxers and everything. Of course I am, but it's exhausting to be so infuriated, and it's futile to be infuriated, really. I mean, the trick is to try to take those emotions and do something with them. And even that, there are only so many hours in a day. There's only so much energy in the body, and you got to work, and you got to eat, and you got to pay attention to your family and so forth. But it always comes back to that for me. What are you doing? You know, you can be mad, you can be pissed, you can go on Facebook, but what are you doing, really? You know, are you... You know, sometimes when I go on Facebook and I argue with the anti-vaxxers, I feel I'm doing something. And it's a false sense of it. I'm not doing anything, you know, because I have to accept the fact that maybe in a haystack there's a needle. But, you know, 99.9% of those people came to that conclusion and are only going to change their minds, not from me, not from... No matter how many things I pull up, no matter how many statistics I conjure from the CDC, you know, just the fact I can cite some of the CDC means nothing to these people, because they're like, oh yeah, the CDC, Dr. Fauci, you know, oh, it's just, it's a government, you know, it's what they want you to think, you know. So we can't. There's on no plane can we come to any common truth. We can come to no common acceptance, because we can't agree on what a most basic tenet of truth or fact is. And so it's pointless for me. The only way somebody is ever going to accept that vaccines are good for you is if they don't get vaccinated and they get COVID and it really hurts them bad. And even that, they might not accept it. You know, even out of every 10 people in that scenario, I'm guessing 3 would come around. And 7 would be like, well, it wasn't actually because of the vaccine. It was, they'll find something else to blame, because otherwise it's saying, you know what? I've based so much of my life and my own personal convictions on lies, which means that my life is a lie. And, you know, what good is life if it's all based on false?
My dad used to tell a story about an old codger around here. I can't remember the man's name, but, he drank, you know, coal camp, drinking, smoking, mm-hmm. card playing, pool playing, brawling. But the old fella drank and smoked, and the good ladies of the Baptist church constantly were on him or clucking about his bad behavior. And then when he died at 97, they declared, see, we tried to tell him that smoking and drinking would kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the same applies to the anti-vaxxer idiots. You know, I'm sure that somewhere in the data, there's one particular data point of somebody who, I don't know, walked out of getting, and it's not funny, walked out of getting their vaccine, and, you know, was hit by a speeding taxi cab.
Right.
See? The vaccine killed him.
Right. And listen again, 2 people very, very close to me who I love dearly, you know, I think they, it's idiocy for them to believe what they believe about vaccines. I don't want to call them idiots because I love them. But it's not just, it's not so simple to just say like, well, it's a bunch of, I don't believe in their, it's, there are people who speak eloquently about why vaccines are bad. You know, it doesn't make them smart or right. and there are people, there are liberals. I met liberals long ago, long before anybody heard of, you know, I'm talking like when my kids were little. So it's like 20 years ago, I met anti-vaxxers. You know, who believe the mercury thing and the autism thing and all that stuff, you know. And these were like East Village liberals at that time, you know. So they do come in, you know, granted the statistics show us a definite political bent, but idiots are everywhere and they come in all kinds of permutations. They're not all tobacco spitting, hamburger chawing, hayseeds. A lot of them are people that, you know, like they're racist too or whatever, anything. Where sometimes there's people that say shit or believe shit, and you're like, how you of all people, you know, a person who I adore greatly, one of my wife's best friends, my wife's best friend, I should say, overall, posted a basically a Israel right or wrong thing, you know, and it was a 100% gaslighting statement, you know, link to an article that was 100% gaslighting about how, you know, basically any action that Israel does is defensive, no matter who the victims are, no matter what buildings are hit by missiles.
Yeah, some the needs of national security just require some 3-year-olds to be murdered by precision weaponry provided by the United States in their beds.
Yeah, or you know, or places that house information journalism, you know, that those places were sought out as well, and of course killing children is tragic, but when you can't, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to say, you know, you're going to bomb journalists because they're saying things you don't want to hear. You know, it's not defensive. That's fascistic, and it's terrorism.
Yeah.
I don't care who commits terrorism. It's terrorism, and I don't defend it. I don't defend it when we do it. I don't, you know, I don't look at, I'm not proud of all the things that the United States has done in the interests of self-defense.
Or how many Afghan wedding parties have we hellfire missiled, Dan?
And not always the good ones.
And if we're going to have the moral clarity to denounce that, then why does anybody else get a pass? I mean, you know, there is, for all intents and purposes, an attempted genocide underway ever since the moment that Jair Bolsonaro took the reins of government in Brazil. We call that out.
Yeah. He was without the first to cast stone. And for God's sake, let's stop casting stones.
Well, that would be a nice place to start. You know that story, don't you? Jesus standing there, the woman taken in adultery. Jesus is standing there. And he calls out to the assembled, seething throng, "Let that person who is without sin cast the first stone." And all of a sudden, and this doesn't show up in Mark, I think it probably didn't work out well for the original draft, but from the back of the crowd, a rock comes flying up and cronks Jesus right in the head. And you know how it is with a scalp wound. They're just bloody. And so, you know, the blood's just running down Jesus' head. And he wipes his eyes, and he looks back in the crowd, and he gets this disgusted look on his face and says, "Honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off."
I knew it. I knew this had to be leading to a punchline. I thought, I don't remember this part in the Bible. I just sort of remember it as a well-learned lesson, and people went away shuffling their feet and looking down at the ground.
No, it's from the Gospel of St. Mark, the unexpurgated version.
I think it's from the Gospel of St. Shecky. Something.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, yeah.
There's a little waka waka at the end of that, you know. Take thine wife. Take thine many wives, please.
Take all my wives, please. Yeah.
I've got 100 of them. I'm Abraham. Or no, he lived to 900, right? I don't know.
No, that was Methuselah. And the years of Methuselah were 964.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the King David had some 700 and some odd wives, I think, and that's before we start counting the concubines. That's what always makes the marriage is a sacred union blessed by God between one man and one woman. Have you actually read the book you claim to worship? Yeah, can you ever heard about David? You ever heard about Solomon?
Right.
Yeah. That was one man doing a whole lot of husbanding.
Yeah, but that's Old Testament. Isn't Old Testament sort of the thing you can cherry pick and specifically like some things and some things don't count? It's the New Testament that really counts because that's the Jesus stuff.
Well, unless you want to hate on gay people or trans people or queer people or non-binary people, then the Old Testament is terribly, terribly, terribly important.
Yeah, and then the thing about tattoos and blending of fabrics. Gets overlooked, even though it's right next to the stuff about the supposed abominations.
Right,
it's right there.
You know,
we're talking Leviticus.
Okay? And you're fucked for those shrimp cocktails.
Oh my God, you might as well be gay if you're going to eat shrimp cocktail.
And I mean, you know, that tempura shrimp you had as an appetizer at the sushi joint? Yep. Off to hell with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't like seafood, as we've discussed, and yes. I'm still suspender, so.
Well, that means you will get a harp and a halo and sit among the elect.
I don't have a tattoo. And you know what? I don't really like blending fabrics a whole lot. I kind of like, denim is, I like 100% cotton.
Oh, I'm an all cotton girl. I mean, yeah.
Ow. I guess, you know, I've got a great belief in news that I'm going to start living the Old Testament life. I'm going to start taking on multiples of wives. Because work for those guys.
I think Helene might have something to say about that.
You know what? She's not here right now. Shh.
and it's just us talking. It's not like it's going out to the world or anything. It'll be preserved on a podcast.
I forgot. Oh, shit.
We can edit that. No, don't worry. We can edit that part out.
I've been on this podcast enough times now. Like the first time or two, it was like, hey, daddy's on a podcast. We're all going to listen. Now it's like, oh, he's on that podcast. Okay. Have fun. I don't think she listens to all of them, but I'm still going to watch my mouth and try not to say stupid things.
Oh, I was so tickled when you for Mother's Day when you put up a picture of the mother of the fabulous Fisher kids.
Oh, my mom, who's letting her hair grow until she's vaccinated, and she's not going to cut her hair, she says, until she gets to see all of her kids, which I'm the last of them. She's out in California right now with my sister Kat.
Oh, how fun! And,
yeah, well, now that they're vaccinated, you know. And I'm vaccinated, but she says she's going to come in the summer. But I don't want her to cut her. I think she looks great.
And she did. She looked fabulous.
Yeah, I like that long, rocking that long mom hair. Age 8. But Helene and my daughter Phoebe are right now in Washington, D.C. as we speak. They are looking for housing for Phoebe, who's going to George Washington University Law School in the fall. On a full ride scholarship, I might brag about.
Oh, no kidding! I mean, I knew she got accepted. I didn't know she got the full boat.
Full ride, baby. You know, the only thing they're not paying for is housing. And Phoebe's taking care of most of that herself because she's a hardworking young woman.
I am so proud of her and for her and proud of y'all and for her for y'all. You did a fantastic job with both Phoebe and Gus.
Thank you. Yeah, I won't argue.
Is Gus working on any documentary projects or anything?
He's in that period. You know, it's awfully tough, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will understand. It's tough for people. And you, your son is in his what? How old is your son?
25.
25. Yeah, it's hard for people in their young 20s in the post-COVID age. You know,
it is so monumentally frustrating. There are all these help wanted signs up all over the place, and that's another one of those issues we can jump into if you'd like. What a help wanted sign means in America today. It means we want you to come back and work for the same shitty wages. But by the way, we don't want to give you more than, say, 22 hours a week.
Right. So that whole what the market demands thing, it only really works in one direction. If the hiring market means you got to pay more or give people like a real, you know, work week so that they can get benefits and health insurance. You know, that's what the market demands. And, you know, sometimes you got to just pull up your bootstraps and, you know, raise your wages and treat workers, you know, well.
Well, if the only, I mean, I know it may sound unfair, but if the only way you can maintain your business model is by keeping your staff on poverty wages, your business model sucks. And in true capitalism, you should not be in business. I mean, if it's the free market and everything, because nobody right. would want to work for you, right?
And there gets to be a certain point where, you know, again, how many dinners do you really need to eat? Like, how many billions do you need to justify, you know?
Well, and the other part of that analysis as well, though, is that you'll note there's no shortage. People who work in jobs that they like are not saying we don't want to work. And most of America, especially that young generation, is not saying we don't want to work. It's not, no, that they're probably not half the slackers that we were. But there's a difference between want to work and can't work. I mean, if you literally cannot afford to take a job because you will lose money taking it, and I don't mean because of unemployment, I mean, you know, the fuel cost of getting to and from work every day.
Right.
You know, the cost of lunch at work. All these things pile up. And
yeah.
And it's hard and it's brutal and it's unfair. And you know what? People who have jobs with decent wages, they're not refusing to go to work. You know, in terms of retail, some of the happiest people on earth are the people who work at Costco because they got union jobs.
That's right.
And union protection. And they've got a dignified retirement plan. And so, you know, they don't have the revolving door employment problem that Walmart does. Here, Walmart is presently hiring people, to, you know, because they've quit being open 24 hours.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ours has. And so you can get a job working the 11 to 7 stocking shelves. And you've got all these mechanical assist devices and whatnot. And it's $14 an hour. And they'll give you full-time work. But they've only got so many of those positions they can open, and it's brutal work. Over across the river in Oak Hill, right now the road is torn up, and so there's a traffic jam every morning, all day long. And I was talking with my partner about it. We were in the car together yesterday, and we passed one of those people, and in this case it was a woman. And she's standing there with traffic going by her in both directions, and she's got a walkie-talkie and a sign and a sign on a post, and it says stop on one side and it says slow on the other.
Right.
And I would guess that 99% of the people who drive past her think, God damn, that's some job. That is some hard-ass job.
Yeah.
On your feet for 8 hours a day, breathing dust. She did not have a respirator.
Yeah.
Breathing exhaust fumes.
If it's raining, you still got to go out there.
And you got to stand there in the damn rain. I mean, work is fucking hard, and it deserves to be compensated accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah. If what happens in that case when somebody decides they're not going to slow or they don't feel like so?
People die. You know, people that do her jobs die every year.
Yeah. No, everybody deserves the dignity of work, and everybody deserves the dignity of being able to earn a basic living from it. And there's no reason in this age of so much prosperity and it's not communism or socialism to say, well, you really don't need a CEO making per hour what many of his or her employees make in a year. That just doesn't really make sense, you know, that your value as a CEO is very valuable. I understand that. It's a high-pressure job. CEOs get fired all the time because it's like being a baseball manager. You only have so many years before, you know, maybe one quarter you don't grow the way you expected to grow, and you're kicked out for somebody else. But, you know, there's always golden parachutes, and there always seem to be second chances. And the fact is that, you know, you're valuable, but are you more integral to the system than somebody who's sealing up the boxes and sending them in the pile to get delivered? Everybody's important, you know. All it takes is one cog to not work, and the whole machine breaks down.
Sure it does.
So you prepare that cog. You know, and that cog also happens not to be an animate cog, but it happens to be a human being who might very well have a family to support and a mortgage to pay, and also consumer products to buy, which then helps everybody else, and everybody else has jobs, and everybody else gets paid. It all comes from the middle, and I'm preaching to the choir. I know this.
But it bears reinforcing, Dan, because we are inundated, especially lately, with this notion, and you know, precious Lindsey Graham's been talking about it for a year now. We can't be giving people this unemployment because they're just going to lay around and they won't go to work. You know, fuck you. Not you, him. and not really.
Not really.
I don't know anybody who's in that position. I do know people who have said, you know what, I'm not going back into that job until it's safe. I'm not going to die. You know, especially people who work in the food service industry. I am not going to die for $3 an hour in tips.
Right. I'm simply not going to be exploited.
You know? Oh, and Dave number 11, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department this evening, has sent a correction. And the years of Methuselah numbered 969. I said four. I cheated Methuselah out of five good years.
Management apologizes to Methuselah.
We regret the error.
And we regret the error to all of his descendants and to the many, to the 969 wives. Well, that should be easy to remember.
But I think they got wiped out in the flood. I don't think there's any descendants of Methuselah.
Oh, that's true. If you take things literally, yeah, that's right. Then we're all children of Noah, right? Aren't we all basically descended from Noah?
Noah and Noah's three sons.
You know, whoever got on the boat, whoever was contributing sperm after that, that's who we're descended from, according to the Old Testament.
Even the Native Americans, yes.
Everybody.
Swim, you bastards!
We're all children of Noah. But you did ask me about my son, thank you. He's gotten some freelance work he's been doing during the COVID thing has been fact-checking for a media organization. And that's something that he can do, you know, at home, online, etc. He's been working with me a little bit. It's been, once again, so busy with production. There's so much stuff that has to be created for streaming, especially, that the union has given me permission to hire my son, who is not in the union. But he pays, while he's working with us, he pays into the union. He pays union dues and into the benefits fund and all of that. To work with me. He's done that a little bit here and there. And it's good because...
That's sweet.
Know, yeah. He likes working. He'd rather work than not work. And it's also just been good now that he's been vaccinated. And you know, our industry does have a very relatively safe COVID protocol. We get tested once a week. We have a 6 feet distance policy that we're continually trying to enforce. It's not easy. But anyway, so I think just going in and being among people has been good and working, you know, with people has been good for him. It's certainly been good for me. When I go into Brooklyn every day, I may, you know, gripe about the commute. You know, it can take me over two hours to get home sometimes with the traffic from Brooklyn. But on the other hand, you know, I like being around people and I still work in a bubble. I have a sort of an office space that we've cordoned off with plastic sheeting all around me, even though I've been vaccinated, you know, properly, and I still wear a mask all the time at work because that is part of our COVID protocol for all employees. I still keep behind the plastic sheet because I ain't taking no chances until we're all clean from this, until herd immunity really has taken place, until my doctors say, yes, you can, I'm not taking off the mask.
No.
You know, I'm still walking around with it.
It's
a matter of life and death for me.
Yeah, it is exactly. I mean, that is no exaggeration. And I'm wearing my mask every time I go into COVID Mart. I mean, Walmart, because yeah. I've over the course of over a year now, I've seen way too many people wearing their masks below their noses as a snot catcher or as some sort of decorative chin strap.
So once they get through the front door, they just tuck it down, and they rely, I guess, on people not calling them on it. And if they do, I guess they get the full tantrum treatment.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I get it too.
I still haven't walked back into the Rippy Mart where I got coughed on, and you know the people in the store did nothing about it. Ain't going back. Sorry. Nope.
No, and in our area, I've seen restaurants that throughout this thing have had full parking lots of people, and they're, you know, they're supposed to have opened up with guidelines. You can tell that they're not, if they were going in the guidelines that had been prescribed all along, they would have had half full parking lots because you're supposed to keep X number of feet between tables. That means you lose your clientele, and a lot of places haven't been willing to do that. And I'm not going to those places. Some of them have really great stuff that I've, you know, enjoyed for years, but I'm not going back there. Again, you know, I'm using my consumer power to you know, and those places might still thrive, but I'm not going to give them my dollars. At least I'll go to the places that have been good and have been suffering because they've been doing the rules correctly. And now that, you know, vaccinations are happening and our governor is saying that you can open up, I'll go to the, I'll at least if nothing else, I'll do takeout. I still can't go to a restaurant, like sit inside. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that this year. But I do a lot of takeout because not just because I'm lazy and don't want to do dishes. I want to, you know, I want to support the local businesses.
Precisely. And when you do your takeout, you try to do it at a local place to keep the money in the community, as opposed to sending it off to corporate headquarters to be parsed out in shareholder profits.
Yeah. And the truth is, a lot of people who bitch and moan about how, you know, who try to bring up small business whenever they're trying to justify things like corporate tax breaks and all that, they don't give a shit about small business, you know. And the fact is that, unfortunately, small business is a rarefied species these days. So much of what business is chain business, even small chain business. And people, you know, there's a reason that Amazon is so hugely successful. And, yeah, I shop at Amazon, too. And there's a reason why, you know, McDonald's and Chili's and all of that and Target and, you know, we don't go to mom and pop hardware. I go to Home Depot oftentimes because I know they're going to have the stuff. But, you know, on the other hand, if I stop and if I think a moment, I will go to a local mom and pop if I can, or I'll try to buy from them when I can.
Yeah. And by the way, we had a note. The Methuselah thing apparently caught some people's attention.
Wow.
Randy in PA said, and boy did Methuselah have liver spots. Ah.
Again, that's from the book of Shecky.
Yes, that's the book of Shecky. Right. But on a more serious note, the subject line is misinformation.
Yes.
Matt in San Francisco writes and says, I recently watched a documentary on a journalist in the Philippines who runs a newspaper online news source. Much of their work is anti-Duterte, as the truth usually is at odds with his claims. You know, he's the Filipino version of Trump. Duterte targeted her as part of their research into how misinformation spreads online. They identified 14 bot accounts that influenced 3 million people to believe the lies of their president. I have no doubt that much of that misinformation ecosystem was tested in the Philippines and then imported to the United States by a key group in the Trump universe. Most of whom tie back to Russia. There has got to be a top secret. There've got to be top secret findings that confirm what happens and how. So why the Democrats are not going after this hammer and tongs is beyond me. I still, you know, I raised the issue and it has gotten some resonance in the community. We need a special prosecutor for January the 6th, Dan. You know, maybe let the DO, the rank and file garden variety DOJ go ahead and do what they do relative to the individual assholes who participated in it. But we need a special prosecutor with a brief as broad as the Mississippi River to look into who organized it, who promoted it, who funded it, and to look into whether there were any laws violated therein. And it needs to go as far as it needs to go. And if it goes all the way to Mara Lardass, so be it.
Yes, that is a tough stream for the salmon to swim up, but it's possible, and it should at least be attempted. There will be resistance at every turn. What can I tell you? I'd love for that to happen. I don't know if it ever will.
And I damned well want to know. I want names of the maggot members of Congress who were giving tours when the Capitol was closed to tours on January 4th, 5th. I want a public declaration of who those people are.
Yeah.
Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Greene.
Right. And then cross-reference to the people that they have arrested. And, you know, were any of those people participants? I don't know the answer to that. I'm asking a speculative question only, but it is worth investigating, absolutely. you know, were people basically given a tech rehearsal for this? And, you know,
that's exactly what it was. And the frightening thing, to use another theatrical term, is, and I forget who came up with it, but I've heard it a number of times and I've repeated it, a failed insurrection is a dress rehearsal for the next one.
Yeah, I mean, as what happened on the 6th, it's like, I wonder if who really thought that this could actually work? Like, were there people, obviously, you know, those people believed, somehow came into the idea, they prevented the vote from, the certification vote from occurring, that somehow or other that meant that they could reinstall their king. And if that meant an end to democracy as we know it, it would become the beginning of what they, democracy as they would claim to know it. And this, they could have, in the words of Scooby-Doo, they could have gotten away with it, you know, weren't for the meddling of, I don't know, it doesn't even meddling kids. It's thank God there weren't more of them, I guess, you know, I mean, thank God that, I don't, in a way, it's like, how did it occur? But also how did we manage to quell this thing? You know, and it's scary. How can we manage to quell it in the future? These are all things that do have to be explored. This idea, you know, the idea that, well, we've learned from it and we need to move on is like denying that there is such a thing as systemic racism, or, you know, that there's a system in place to oppress people and a system in place to continue to promote fascism. Fascism is at a risk. It's been at the highest risk of my adult life in the past 4 years. It never occurred to me that we, you know, even during like the George W. Bush.
Yeah, to quote Wallace Shawn, inconceivable.
Inconceivable. You know, I, as much as I was like, well, we're having a war based on a lie, and I don't like this war, and I wish we didn't have it, and I'm going to protest against it and everything else, I never quite took that thing of like, and maybe I should have, I never thought, well, Bush is a fascist, you know, that he will try to overthrow government, all forms of government in order to promote the agenda. And that wasn't something I really was conscious of, at least, until he who shall not be named got put into office.
Oh, and just to toss something out there for your consideration, I ran across a news story the other day out of the entertainment world, and I immediately thought of you. There's going to be a new film production of the Scottish play.
Oh yeah,
and what an and I mean, what an excited! First of all, it's going to be produced, written, and directed by Joel Coen.
Oh, uh huh.
Yeah, one of the Coen brothers.
Coen brothers.
Which I find exciting, because I haven't heard about him being any kind of skeevy, pervy asshole, which is a win. But. The leading roles are going to be it's going to be shot in black and white, which is kind of nervy. It's the first film that one of the Coen brothers has ever done without the other brother. Shot in black and white. And the title role will be played by Denzel Washington. And his lady wife will be played by Frances McDormand.
Interesting.
And then way down there, and I don't know what role, but Stephen Root's going to be in it too.
Ah. That is some cast. I don't know. I look forward to that. I've seen a number of productions. You know, have you ever seen the one with, I don't know how many years ago, I think 2015, with Michael Fassbender?
Yes.
I thought that was an excellent adaptation. It really worked as a film, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember who directed it, but it was just really cinematic, but yet a play. I mean, it didn't feel like Zack Snyder took a hold of it, in other words. I mean, it felt true to the play, but yet it was just gorgeous and exciting to watch. And it was like the way I felt what's his name? Kenneth Branagh's Henry V, where it's like, I can understand this, even though I don't understand every literal thing that they're saying. I know what's going on, and I'm intrigued by it, and I'm it's.
You know, the when the news broke about what was the name, horse's name, Medina Spirit. Having illegal amounts of some steroid in its blood.
Yeah.
You know, immediately Nitwit Nero put out a press release. America's falling apart, and then the winner of the Kentucky Derby is a junkie.
Yeah, because it's Biden's fault.
Right, but I was immediately reminded, you mentioning Henry V, when I saw that burbling, I immediately went to Henry V, and it is an absolute and most excellent horse. That wonderful scene where the Dauphin is pacing around in his crown prince tent. I cannot. Why will not the day dawn? I have the best horse. We're going to kill us some Englishmen. Yada yada yada. Mm. And the constable of France, having had about enough, it is an excellent and absolute horse. It's just a great. It's a great scene, but it's a great line because, yeah, and Shakespeare does what Shakespeare does for a reason. He's supporting the Tudor dynasty and everything, so he's got to make sure that the audience understands that
you don't want them canceled.
The audience has to understand that the Royal House of France was a bunch of shit-eating assholes.
Uh-huh. Did I lose you?
No, I'm right here. So it's fun. Oh, by the way, a couple other things. Randy in PA points out, when my parents, going back to misinformation, when my parents retired, their worldviews became somewhat frozen, and they didn't realize that the supermarket had morphed into chemical stew offerings and that the news wasn't given by Uncle Walter anymore. And that's, you know... And you've got to stay on top. You've got to stay actively engaged.
Yes.
Because you know, I hope the day never comes when, as an elderly person, I'm just sitting there glued to Fox, letting them scare the bejesus out of me every waking hour. But it sure does seem like that is a phenomenon.
Well, it's very easy to sit back and just absorb, you know? I mean, it's literally one of the easiest things you can do. It's almost just like lying in a hospital bed and getting an IV of misinformation, where you just sit in your chair and you let Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson tell you what is supposedly the truth. And they, you know, that anything else is fake. But you know, even HuffPost is guilty of it. You know, of only filtering the things that I want to read about or in a view that I embrace. We have to be open. You know, we have to, you know, again, we should be the party of evolution, not just supporting Mr. Darwin, but we should be the party supporting the evolution of ideas and the idea that we can all change. And it's okay. You know, it's wrong to do or say something racist or sexist. But that doesn't mean you are a racist or sexist for life. It means you have a lot of work to do to acquit yourself from that and to continually try to not be that thing and to not accept that rules are meant to never change. Rules will constantly change and should constantly change because the players keep changing. And we need to accept that and we need to keep learning. You know, I need to keep my ears open of pronouns, correct pronouns, and I have to... Also, when I visualize you, Robin, I have to keep visualizing you as a woman because for most of my years, I visualized you as not a woman. But now you are a woman, and in my head, that's what I've got to remember that you are. And also, I have friends now who are non-binary or identify not as men, but yet they're not doing what you do. They're not taking the drugs. For now, they just simply want to identify as men. I do have two friends that are in that regard. So I just have to keep training my brain to respect those people and try to remember to get the pronouns and get the images in my head correct. And if I make mistakes, you know,
you have been forgiving of those mistakes at 8.5?
Absolutely, and I will continue, because mistakes made in good faith are far far more, or you know, there's no malevolence in them, and you know, on you know,
I do feel that way, yeah.
Yeah, on you know, on the other hand, you know, when I'm doing my best to present as best I can, and you know, and I get dude or sir.
Uh-huh.
You can almost tell that somebody's trying to send you a message.
Right. They're saying, I don't accept you.
Right. You're not valid. And you're not visible. You're not visible to me as who you are.
Right.
You're busy. You know, you only exist. The only thing that exists is my negative impression of you.
Right. You know, the way I grew up, you're either a man or a woman. And that's what you are. And you can't change that. It's like, well, okay, you say you can't, you know, that you can't physically change or emotionally change yourself, but yet people are physically and emotionally changing themselves constantly. You know, women.
Right, and this story out of Tennessee is just particularly galling. The governor just signed a bill passed by the Tennessee legislature that says that if a business allows trans people to use the restroom, the public restroom that they identify with, they have to post a sign saying basically, warning, we let trans people go to the potty here.
So this is something I've never quite understood. Maybe you can explain it to me. Okay, so let's say in general with this transgender bathroom crap, right? What is it they prefer? If you, Robin Kincaid, enter a restaurant dressed as you are, as you like to dress these days, and as you are evolving biologically through your, through the what you take, your medications, which restroom are they preferring you go to? They're saying that you, Robin, should go into a men's room. Is that what they really want?
Yes, and they want, and they want trans men who have, for all intents and purposes, may have beards down to their belly buttons to go to the ladies' room, which is going to cause chaos and get people beaten and killed.
Yeah, do they really think that, like, you know, a majority of cisgender men in a situation, or at least any, you know, that all cisgender men in that situation are going to be accepting of, like, oh, It's a guy who was born. It's a woman who was born a guy. So it's okay. No, you're absolutely right. There's going to be chaos and tremendous. There's going to be violence. There's people going
to that's what they want. That is ultimately what they want, and they do not wish to be they do not wish to be bothered with facts or reality. And so, the other thing they do is, you know, when they insist that a trans man go to the ladies' room, they're opening the door for the real malevolence that they say that they fear to take place.
It's not a real well-thought-out plan, let's face it.
Yeah, well, the thought-out is not anything that's high on their skill sets.
No.
Because they're motivated by their hatred and their ignorance.
Yeah, it's very simplistic. It's very easily – it's an easy brand, I guess, too. It's just – life is more complex than they would rather have it be, and sorry, but it just is. And you know, there's differences in sexuality now that we hadn't even thought about. Now, gender, you know, gender identification,
and it's always been there. That's the thing; it has always been there. It's just that people, you know, beginning and you know, June is Pride Month, and I'm terribly, terribly excited because this is going to be my first Pride Month.
Hmm.
And Pride Month stems from something that happened in your beloved Gotham.
Right.
When trans women in a gay bar finally got fed up with being harassed by the fucking police.
Right.
And
it's not right.
riots.
Yeah, and it's the Stonewall riots, but the fact of the matter is the cops had been, just as in Chicago in 1968, the cops had been rioting for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And now that, I mean, it's, you know, it's not safe. It's still not safe, but it is better than it once was. But it still comes at a cost.
Well, I think as things get better, that makes the reactionary push against more violent and harsher, you know, because they know they're losing. You know, it's the same way that, you know, there's all these voter suppression laws. They lost. They lost the last election. They know it. They lost fair and square. They know that. And they know that one of the a big reason why was black people showed up at the polls big time. So how do we get back what we want? Keep black people from voting. You know, not just the ID, you know, I don't have to tell you, not just the ID laws, but, you know, let's limit how many places you can vote and how you can vote. You know, it's all because they're pushing against the inevitable. They know they're losing. They know they're going to lose. They're just trying to hold on for their lifetimes. You know, they just want to be able to keep their jobs as long as possible, you know, and they're going to do whatever it takes just to hold on to their puny ass House of Representative jobs. That's really, it's self-preservation. And they're gonna, if that means you know, what unites people is a common enemy. Oh, let's make a person who was born a man but now says, you know, he'd be more comfortable as a woman, let's make that the enemy somehow, as if they're taking anything away from anybody else by that person making that very personal decision of true freedom. It's ridiculous. You're taking away nothing. You're only giving. You know, it's all zero sum to some people.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And with a trenchant observation, Lee in New York City says, trans people go to the potty, MAGA people go to the Capitol and do not use the bathroom. Because, you know, they smear their feces on the walls. And yet somehow the Republicans aren't nearly as upset about that as they are that, you know,
well, you got to employ what about at all costs. You
know, absolutely, yeah.
And you know, I had people.
And it's gonna be downright bizarre. I mean, it's gonna be downright bizarre in the restroom at the Rippy Mart when I'm standing at the mirror, you know, fixing my lipstick. I mean, in the men's room.
And Lee in New York City will concur with me. It's like I've had people online insist to me that BLM was quote unquote burning my city down. I'm here. It's not happening. You know, I've got a brother-in-law that lives near Portland, Oregon. It's not on fire. Portland's okay. It's got problems. Yeah, but BLM isn't burning Portland down. It's not burning New York City down. Don't, you know, that one image they keep showing you over and over, you know, that happened a year ago, and yeah, it was real bad that the Target, you know, got burned down. But, you know, Target has insurance, and they're back up. And meanwhile, the Capitol, you know, Capitol's only the, you know, the place where, you know, all democracy is supposed to take place and all legislation takes place. So, you know, that's kind of a bigger deal than Target to me. So much for your what about as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. What about actual lives versus property damage?
Yeah.
I mean, even the law recognizes that the two are incomparable.
I'm not pro riot. You know, in fact, you know, I know people who do take the position of, well, you know, they're not against the riots because they feel it's a form of expression. There's justifications for rioting that I don't agree with. Let's just say that I'm not pro rioting.
Well, you know, Dr. King said a riot is the language of the unheard. But, right. You know, when it's not, what happens when it's not a riot? You know what? Washington, D.C. was not a riot. And Nitwit Nero turned loose the cops and the National Guard on them and gassed them. He engaged in an act of chemical warfare against American citizens, and people were
justifying it.
On the other hand, they were told to keep, you know, hands off and kid gloves with the maggots on January the 6th.
That's right. We have evidence of that. Yeah,
it's factual.
And look, I mean, it's amazing that, like, what happened with George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, that, you know, we all saw it. We all saw the video. We all saw all of that stuff. And we were, you know, like the OJ trial, so many of us were following this trial with definite, you know, rooting for sides. And there were people rooting for Derek Chauvin. And, you know, but there's a certain point where, you know, you just deny the undeniable. This idea that, yeah, he had his, yeah, you know, did he? Maybe he had his knee on the guy's back and not on his neck, and for how long? And maybe it was a heart attack and all this stuff. And it was just a relief in that one single incident.
Yeah, the tailpipe, the tailpipe exhaust killed him, not Derek Chauvin. Well, why, you know, why was he where the tailpipe exhaust could kill him? I mean, you know.
And also that whole thing of, well, if he just didn't resist, he'd be alive. It's like, okay, he stopped resisting long before he died. Like, you know, the police thing is supposed to be, when you got him under control, you don't need to kill him, you know? And I think when you got somebody face down, cuffed, and you're on top of them, that's under control. You got this. You're surrounded by, what, four or five other fellow police officers, also with their guns. You don't need to kill the guy now. It's just a relief that in that one single incident, at least, a jury went, you know what, we see all the same things that everybody's seen, and we've come to this conclusion, which should be obvious to anybody with eyes and a brain. And there are still, of course, people that are, you know, whatabouting and justifying it all, because they just will not accept what their brain and their eyes should be telling them. But in that one single, not systemic change, but, you know, one small victory, we won that one, you know. And that's the thing too, Robin, is I got to keep looking at the small victories, you know. I got to keep looking at the symbolic gestures, even if they're bullshit, because I got to have some hope. It's like the thing that when the vaccine, you know, when last week when the CDC, you know, announced what they did about the masks, and if you had the vaccine, you didn't have to wear the mask anymore and all that stuff, it's still like, it set off a form of chaos, because people were then, you know, the message was not sent out really well. I got to give that one to the Biden administration. They could have done a better rollout of the information. But, you know, it's, oh, God, where was I going with all of this? Just, I got to look at good things. You know, I got to look at, it's like, you know what? Things are getting better with the pandemic. There's still a lot of fuck nuts out there, and there's still a lot of assholes and dangerous people out there, and there's still a lot of, and systemic racism didn't go away with the Chauvin verdict. And I mean, but, you know, on the other hand too, it's like I posted today, Lego just put out a new set to celebrate LGBTQ community by having a multicolored rainbow Lego set. And it's like, you know, if some kid out there gets that, or you know, plays with it, or just gets the message that, hey, You're not like other people. That's all right. You know, you be you.
That's okay.
It's all right. I mean, Mr. Rogers was saying it forever to kids. Like, you want to play with a doll? It's okay to play with a doll. It doesn't make you any less of a boy or a girl or whatever you want to be. You're just you. And if it makes you happy and it doesn't hurt anybody, do that. You know. So things like that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, as a child, I was allowed to play with dolls, as long as the dolls were dressed in military garb and pretending to kill people.
Yeah, that's right. As long as it's G.I. Joe and you call it an action figure, it's all right. But God forbid, Barbie, you get caught having Barbie and Ken drive to her apartment. I mean, but, you know, you got to face it. That Barbie penthouse, man, that was so cool. It had the working elevator. Yeah. Didn't want to.
Yeah, meanwhile, you know, G.I. Joe slept in the damn dirt because, you know, he was macho.
Well, G.I. Joe had some cool... I like G.I. Joe, and I played with the Barbies too. And I'm like any boy of my generation, most boys of my generation, you know, I didn't exactly publicize it. You know, it was done kind of like, you know, if my sisters came out, I'd be like, you don't tell Scott Doak or I'll kill you. All right, I won't tell Scott Doak or Barbie, you know. And I was, you know, they're naked, they're having sex. You know, that's what I love you. Well, make love, not war. That's pretty much
it. Wait a minute, is this your Me Too Barbie moment?
This is my Me Too Barbie moment. Sure, I'll play with Barbies, but, you know, I usually had him doing the stuff I saw in my dad's magazines that he kept under the socks in his drawer. You know,
so we're at the end of the program, and we're going deep in the Fisher family archive weeds.
Yeah, well, it always comes back to me. I can't solve the problems of the world, but I can share with you a story of something that happened to me in the 1970s. Because let's get our priorities straight, shall we?
Absolutely. Dan, this is, and they always are, this has been a delightful conversation. Although we addressed the problems of the world, some of them.
And we didn't solve a damn one, but we talked about them.
And we just had a lovely time visiting. And I thank you, and I look for, I enjoy, and I look forward to our conversations every time, because you always bring an insight that is only yours.
Well, that's the highest compliment. That's what I've always aspired to, is just to have my own shit and have it be mine, to own my shit. But thank you for having me on, and I don't know if you've raised any money tonight. I hope so. I do think that somewhere, maybe sometime soon, we ought to maybe do something that's a little telethon-like. I know we're trying to wrap things up here, but as you know, my sister is a singer, a very good one, and she sung on your show.
Yes.
And she doesn't know it yet, but I'm going to try to get her involved in doing something to raise money for you. Maybe something like a private song or something sung to one of your listeners or the highest bidder kind
ooh,
of thing.
Ooh, ooh.
This yet. Don't tell her.
Oh, no. It's well, just between us. No.
But yeah, I don't think she's listening. She might be listening tonight. But anyway, if she is, Kath, I have this idea. Private song.
Well, and I don't know why. It's kind of weird, and I've mentioned it, but now we're going to go into the program Friday on the Front Porch. We'll go into that tomorrow with a $1,300 fundraising hole.
I will say too, there's one, you know, I don't have, I'm a good singer. I'm not anywhere near the singer my sister is, but, you know, I was trying to think like, what could I offer up that's of value? I do have a lot of really cool vintage screenplays, like original copies of screenplays that maybe some of your movie fan listeners might like. I think I even have one that's autographed by a long running television show.
Ooh.
I can't, because I don't technically have the right to give that away to strangers, but given that the show's been off the air for a long time and it was on the air for over 20 years and is still part of a franchise that I can't name. Anyway, I think I have a script somewhere with a bunch of autographs from stars of that show with initials SW, JO, and some others. If I can find that,
oh my.
I think I'm gonna auction that one off to you guys for some money.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And it, basically what's happening, if what other people who work in this industry tell me is correct, is that a lot of folks on our side have decided to just, we won, we got the House, we got the Senate, Biden's the president, fuck it, don't need to worry about it, bye.
No.
And it's just made things extremely hard. And by the way, just to let you know, because you were so helpful, I had my big follow-up from my oral surgery day before yesterday.
Yeah.
And everything is healed up nicely, and I can now go and, like, get impressions, and I think...
Oh, I'll give you my Sammy Davis impression, baby.
Yeah, that impression. And then September we can start talking about sinking lag bolts in my jawbone. Fun,
but no, I'm so glad you did that. I forgot to congratulate you on your successful surgery so far. And yeah, and I've seen your pictures online, and you look like you've healed up all nice and pretty. And if you don't mind me saying that.
Oh, I don't mind at all.
Yeah.
I appreciate the affirmation.
Like I said, I look for goodness. I got to look for goodness because,
yeah. You know. And you know, the thing that I've been talking a lot about lately is, and it's just three simple words, but when we are talking amongst ourselves on our side of the debate,
yeah.
Three words. Assume good faith. If we assume that we on our side are all going forward in good faith instead of leaping to judge, you know, we'll save the judgment for the other side.
Right.
But if we assume good faith on our own parts, I think we will be a lot more likely to reach viable solutions.
There's no shame in these simple words spoken, which is, you know what? Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we give in to a lot of the nonsense, but every once in a while, twice a day, a broken clock is correct. And as much as it might pain our pride, every once in a while, you should try to say to somebody or other in your life, you know what, maybe you're right. Just try it out. You know, we don't have to be right all the time, even if we secretly believe that we are. You don't have to at least give a little ground here and there. But don't give in to
you don't.
Race.
Yeah, every hill you fight on is not a hill that you have to die on.
That's right. Fight like hell for your LGBTQ friends. They need it. A lot of people need our help, but I don't know, pick your battles, do your best. And if you make a mistake, forgive yourself. You know, life's a long game.
That it is. Dan Fisher, amen. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And we'll take another run at this next month, I hope.
God bless you, descendants of Noah all. And
nice circle back. Well done. Dan, have a great night. Say hi to Helene and Phoebe and Gus, and I hope they're having Helene and Phoebe are having a productive search for dwellings. And we'll talk soon.
Yeah. Love you, babe.
All right. Bye. The one and only Dan Fisher. I love those conversations. So that's it. We enter tomorrow with a $1,300 fundraising hole. Hopefully we knock some of it out. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is it'll be $1,290 tomorrow because Jeremy jumped in. Thank you to Jeremy and Ralphs both. Thank you so much for standing in the breach this evening. Thank you to all of our PayPal subscribers, Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Just remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please get your vaccine as soon as possible if you haven't already. Wear a mask if you feel like it's the right thing to do. In many instances, you will be correct that it is. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you burbling about how separating vaccinated people from unvaccinated people is just like the Holocaust, avoid that person like the plague, because she is. Later.